Let's pray together. Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Friend, beloved God.
Friend, beloved God.
Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ.
Babaji Krishna.
Babaji Krishna.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Lahiri Mahashaya.
Swami Sri Yukteswar.
Swami Sri Yukteswar.
Beloved Master.
Beloved Master.
Paramhansa Yogananda.
Paramhansa Yogananda.
Saints of all religions.
Saints of all religions.
Humbly we bow to you all.
Humbly we bow to you all.
Inspire us.
Inspire us.
That we may be guided.
That we may be guided.
By your presence within.
By your presence within.
To the right path.
To the right path.
To the right thoughts.
To the right thoughts.
To the right inspirations.
To the right inspirations.
That we may come quickly.
That we may come quickly.
Into attunement and realization.
Into attunement and realization.
Of thy divine light within.
Of thy divine light within.
Om. Peace.
Peace.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you all very much for coming. Most of you are, relatively speaking, new to Ananda. Darlene is a notable exception, having lived in this community since its inception. And she came at my request because we also wanted to have some people here who'd been involved longer because, as you all know, you're guinea pigs. But we have no intention of sticking you with needles or dissecting your brains or anything like that. So, and Graham is sort of a middle level. He's been here a little longer, and he also is here as someone to help us sort of evaluate what we're doing. Biraj lived in this community a couple of times, twice, or just...
Only one long stretch.
How long did you live here?
3 years.
3 years. But Biraj has been part of Ananda for about 40 years, close to as long as me.
Only
28. Only 28, okay. And Biraj is Lahari's absent husband because he's been assigned to Pune, India, and hasn't been able to live here yet. We are holding out the very fond hope that... we have his wife hostage, and that sooner or later he's going to come and live here.
I think it'll work.
India doesn't suit her. It suits him, but I think we're going to win in the end. And it will be a delight to have him back living with us. And Shanti, of course, you all know. Now, to just give you a little idea of where we are and what we're doing, and then we'll go forward. For some time, in a kind of almost humorous way, it's been extremely difficult to explain to people what it means to be, and we'll use the word member of Ananda. We've had a membership in Ananda from the beginning of Ananda, when it was Ananda Village, and you pay money to be a member, and it gave you right to live on the land. And that was the beginning of it, when we were a rural community and you could have a house there. You had to become a member to live there. Then when we started creating urban centers, and David and I came here in 1987, and we had the idea in our mind that churches are supported by their members, and you become a church member, and it's a declaration of what your spiritual path is and what you believe in, and it's how the group is supported. So from the very start, back then, we had like Ananda church members. We were in this big movement at that point to make people more aware of the fact that Ananda was not just a rural community, but was a spiritual group that you could be part of no matter where you lived. I mean, now that's sort of well established, but that was something that started. And we were also trying to sort of, we called ourselves church. It was sort of something we did very consciously because we wanted people to understand you come every week and you support it. Those were two things we wanted people to know. So calling it church and then church member was natural. In the last 25 years, you know, lots of things have shifted and we've more or less stayed with that same format. But more recently, we've been trying to think about it in a much more creative manner. And we've been very helped, and I have to say honestly, by a Christian minister named Rick Warren, whom many of you know because he wrote the book, The Purpose-Driven Life. And he's so well known that I think he gave either the invocation or the benediction for the Obama inauguration His name is Rick Warren. He would have been a success at whatever field he chose to go into. He's a really bright man. And he's built this 10,000-member church in Southern California. But he just wrote in a very, very nice way all about sort of how to get people involved. And we were very inspired by what he wrote, even though his whole context is different. His ideas were good. And he pinpointed something that we were having trouble getting a handle on, which is sort of where the gap was in helping to draw people in to become part of Ananda, to become committed members. It's partly confused in our reality because we also have discipleship, which is a whole different thing. And most of the people who become members and stay members become disciples, but you're not necessarily a disciple when you first become a member. But one of the things he really recommended very strongly, two things that we took much to heart, was that at the time when people are ready to become a member, we should have an informal gathering with whoever is defining the energy, which in this case is David and me with the able and creative and wonderful cooperation and help of all the other staff people that you know. And really help people to spend a little bit of time to focus in really clearly on what it means to be part of Ananda. And the ideal in the future will be that when a person expresses interest in becoming a member, then before they actually sign up formally, then we'll have a session like this together. But because we're still just sort of feeling our way and trying it out, we ask those of you who are relatively speaking new and to just come and help us practice. But in the meantime, Shanti and David Gamow and I, for the last several months, have been trying to do something that you think would be obvious after all this time, which is define what it means to be part of Ananda. And we've had some of the people like Darlene and others who've been with us for years. And it's been sort of a joke. It's actually been more difficult than we are proud to admit to actually bring it to a clear focus. But I think we've come up with some very nice ideas that are not just abstract ideas, you know, not just pretty philosophy, but really, okay, if I'm really going to make a declaration to myself and to God and my community that this is what I'm going to do, what will that look like and how will I make my life reflect that? So what I'd like to go through with you today is basically sort of how that has come to a focus. And we'll go through it sincerely, really going point by point and discussing or asking questions and just trying to get an idea. We won't think about evaluating this until we're all finished. And the last hour we'll serve lunch and we can just, you know, chat around the lunch table and just be comfortable with each other. Now, we having this in our home and all of you are friends because we want this to be informal. This is not really about my opportunity to be eloquent. This is the opportunity for us to really understand what it means to be part of Ananda. Okay, is that clear to everyone? Are there any questions or thoughts or anything? Yes, all right.
Since we joined and started coming to the church services, I've been finding it difficult to come up with an answer when people ask me.
Right.
What are you doing? What is Ananda?
Right.
Is it a church? Well, yes. Is it services? Well, yes. But then there's a community. And,
yes.
And I really need a definition.
Well, I hope by the end of this morning. So hold that one in mind, and then in 3.5 hours, we'll see whether you can answer it. No, Ed, that's the truth. I'm looking at Darlene because we were laughing about this in another group discussion about how long it takes you to figure out what this really is. Yeah, it's partly good that you can't because it is expansive and amorphous and not easily categorized, but we could make it a little easier. There was a mother who was started to come to services, and she brought her daughter, who was about 8, to Sunday school, and apparently they visited a lot of different churches. And the mother came and told us that she overheard her daughter speaking to the little child next door. Oh, we're going to a new church. Now we believe in Parmesan Yugoslavia.
That's
So I hope you represent us a little better than that, Hartman Steele. Well, and from her point of view, it made perfect sense. Okay. As we already mentioned, the bathroom is downstairs. There's two more bathrooms upstairs in case the bathroom is busy and you need to come in. Hello, Ormella. Welcome. I put water out on the table because hydrated people have better brains. And tea and caffeinated people are wide awake, so there's tea and coffee in the other room, too. Okay. So, I think I'll just start presenting things and then we'll start discussing, okay? The first, basically, we've brought the idea of what it is to be part of Ananda down to four concepts and 12 verbs is how we've been putting it, just so it's really simple, because the more we can have it in our mind as a simple formula, the better. But I'm going to back up even a step further. We've had this thought that we've been saying for a long time, that you're a church member. But as time has passed, you know, being a church member seems an incomplete idea, because there's so many aspects about this that are not church-like. You don't have a simple dogma. You're not identified with one recognizable denomination. It just doesn't, the word really doesn't work. And in fact, even though our building says church, we've gone back to calling it a temple. It's just, temple is a more universal word. Partly this has happened because we have a lot of work in Europe and India. And in Europe, church means Catholic. And I mean, there just is no other concept. I mean, when you say church, maybe it's Lutheran if you're in Germany, but it's still, it has a very definite meaning. And in India, it's an anathema because it means you're a Christian missionary come to destroy their culture. So it's not really popular. And as Swamiji said, we need to think more universally. Temple works everywhere. So temple is what we're saying. But you're still not just part of a temple, because a temple is a place. A temple might be an organization. And the real reality of what Ananda is, and this is a step that we're going to go to later on, but there's two aspects of what you're part of. What one part of it is, well, it was defined when Yogananda founded his organization. He called it Self-Realization Fellowship, which is actually, it's a bit of a whatever, like military intelligence and jumbo shrimp and those sorts of words. The words are a little contradictory, and that is part of what the Ananda dilemma is. Self-realization is personal and internal. It's between you and God. And one of the things that is so fundamental to what we're doing is that this is really about your relationship with God, and I'll come to that in just a moment. And that's what makes Ananda what it is. Ananda is not a place, and it is not an organization. And in fact, you know, we don't, even though we have to have a certain focus and enough of a system so that people can sort of see us and figure out what to do, none of that is an end in itself. And that's one of the things that makes it hard to define. It's merely a way of holding energy so that individuals will find the incentive, the inspiration, and have the tools and the methods they need to move toward their own inner relationship with God. So that self-realization part of it has been a strong focus, and that's why people come. After many years, I finally figured out that the unifying demographic of the people who come to Ananda, which is impossible to find, I mean, just looking in this room, we're all ages, we're all nationalities, we're different education levels, different cultural, social backgrounds, all sorts of different things. The unifying factor is everybody who comes to Ananda, it has occurred to them that the inner world is vitally important, and that's what has to be developed. No matter how they define that, even if they don't define that yet as being about God or about gurus, but somehow or another, that intuition has come in that it isn't just about what we're doing outside, it's also what we're doing inside. And that's again where we separate from a lot of church organizations. I've often quoted Garrison Keillor, who says that sitting in church and thinking it'll make you a Christian is like sitting in your garage and thinking you'll turn into an automobile. That there's no relationship between the external if there's not a corresponding internal. But then Yogananda added that word, fellowship. And fellowship means us, you know. We're all relating to each other. And Ananda itself tends to attract people, I mean, almost to a person, who will say, I'm not a person who joins, I'm not part of organizations, I've always gone my own way, I'm self-defined. You know, it's we're a whole group of people who don't join anything, except we all are part of it. I mean, we start with Swami Kriyananda, who just basically has always followed his own inner intuition. And where we've really been broken down in our conversation, with just even with ourselves, is to make that bridge from self-realization to fellowship. But the part of it that is so real for any of us who've been involved for any period of time, and that's where we have an obligation, is it's in the relationships with one another that really a great deal of the power for self-realization comes. And that seems a bit contradictory, because this is supposed to be just between me and God. But in the times that we're living, and it's partly just the time where we are right now, this world does not support self-realization. This world just works extremely hard to commit you to external realities. I've had just the strangest experience. I've never been much of a girl. I mean, I have a female body, but I've never been much of a girl. In the mid-80s, we had this store in Nevada City, which was a women's clothing store, a very successful store, and they had a fashion show every year. And the owner of the manager of the store is a very good friend of mine, was a friend, Paula. And she asked me to be a model. And I thought that was just so amusing, and it was and remains the only thing I've ever done just because I was a girl, ever, in my life. You know, and I put on all these clothes, and I sailed back and forth. It was very informal, but it was just like such an experience. And recently I've been looking at pictures of myself from 25 years ago. And I mean, this, I don't mean this to sound silly, but I was a really pretty girl. But I was reflecting on, why does that strike me so strongly now? And it's, I realized, because I was always a little uncomfortable. I never thought of myself as being nice looking. And whether I am or not is completely irrelevant. But I was always just a little uneasy, you know, about my appearance. I just never felt I quite measured up. And I look now and I think, my, she was quite attractive. But where does all that come from? That just comes from this culture that we live in, which is always on us, to make us feel that we're not quite okay, and that we're trying all the time, and, you know, just doing so many things to make ourselves okay in an external sense. So, I mean, that's the least of the ways in which this culture does not support self-realization. It's not a time where anyone but the most advanced can stand alone. We just have to have the supportive environment, because when you step outside of it, merely the vibrations of other people's thoughts begin to influence your mind. But when you can reunite yourself where the vibrations are strong, and Swami also put it in another way, he said, when enough people pray deeply enough, it attracts a ray of grace. So you go into our temple when we're all together for classes or for satsang or just cleaning the pews or whatever. We don't have pews anymore, but just straightening up and cleaning things up. There's a ray of grace in there. That, and what it does is it resets your personal vibration. And it's still your personal vibration, but the collective energy really makes it easier to stay on that line. Now, that's one part of it. The other part of it is, honestly, the relationships we have with one another. And, you know, some of you are entering in more new at this point, and those relationships are just forming. And it's a fact about Ananda relationships that they're not instantaneous. You know, you can go to lots of social circles and just be a kind of cheerful person and tell stories and, you know, you make new friends and everybody's friends, but it all happens on the level of the ego and the personality, which it's not a bad thing. But the relationships that form in the context of Ananda have many subtle components to them. And the most subtle component is that it's really not about personality. We're not united, and I don't mean this to sound funny, because we actually like each other. You know? It's not that I like this one because she's nice and that one because he's handsome and this one because he's clever. It's the way the relationships form is because we're all aspiring to be in tune with the same reality, and that aspiration, that shared aspiration, makes us friends on a level that really actually nothing can break. I had the oddest realization in my early years at Ananda that one of my best friends in the community was a woman that I didn't get along with at all. We intensely disliked each other. Our personalities totally clashed, and we had awful karma from the past lives, I mean. But her dedication was complete, and so was mine. And in a very weird way, I knew we were best friends. And that was when I began to realize that it all has a completely different meaning here. And that realization opens the heart in a way that is completely different from I like you and you like me. And then there is also a kind of feedback that comes from those relationships that it's very hard to see yourself. Just as I was talking, I didn't even know what my face looked like when I was a young woman, really. So it's very hard to know who we are and what we're doing inside ourselves, but we get that reflected back from one another. And it's very, very difficult to transform yourself unless that energy is coming to you. And then I would say one more thing about this, and we'll talk more deeply about it. That the kind of support that the spiritual family gives you, and it's not just so much about bringing you hot casseroles if you're, you know, sick in bed. It's this every day and every encounter faith that we have in one another. The same belief that we have in the possibility of self-realization for ourselves, we project upon one another. And that is a valuable beyond imagination of expectancy, to have people who really believe in you and when you don't believe in yourself. So what we've watched over the years is that people who come, and the way we always put it is they come to get Kriya. They'll just come, they'll take the classes, they'll get Kriya, or they'll get their discipleship, and then they'll go away and we'll never see them again. And then when we do see them, they've usually stopped practicing, and they're usually pretty much either as they were when we first met them or worse. But the ones who not only go for the self-realization, but also accept the fellowship, those are the ones over years that we see that just, you know, that just open like a lotus. And it seemed important to not keep that a secret. Out of respect for the self-realization part, there was just, we understand there's this necessity to be more honest with people. And help them to understand that, yes, this is all within you, but really, if you want to awaken it within you, you're going to also have to relate to everyone else. Because generally speaking, and I don't want to be rude, the reason people don't want to relate to everyone else is not for their spiritual well-being. It's self-protective, it's a desire not to put out as much energy, it's a whole lot of things that don't necessarily need to be honored. Now, don't misunderstand me. You don't ever have to do more than sit in the same room with people. But there is a vibrational exchange. You don't have to become a social person. In fact, a couple of people have told me the same story. One woman, actually, Daya, who's living in our house right now, she lives in India. She's a very outgoing, very dynamic person. And when she first came to Ananda, was running her own business, very successful businesswoman. And she was just used to relating to people. You know, she just knew how to relate. And she came to Ananda week after week. And she said she was like she was made out of Teflon or clear glass. She just couldn't get anybody to see her or relate to her and all of her, you know, well-honed methods for making connections just were an absolute dead flop. And she's a very attractive young woman, younger at that time, still young. And she just was totally confused. But she was very attracted to the masters, and she finally just gave up. She said, well, if these people don't like me, then maybe God will just have to take me. And she started coming in and relating to the gurus. Almost immediately, people started relating to her. It was like, It was very instructive to me because I hadn't actually focused in on it quite that deeply. But it's our attunement. We're all in tune with the same thing, so we automatically meld with each other.
So that was an unconscious response on everybody else's part?
Yes, it was unconscious.
Just because they weren't on the same wavelength that she was?
She was trying to make friends with personality and the ego way that people normally do. And, I mean, she has both a charming personality and a pleasant ego. So it wasn't like she was in any way offensive, but it was the wrong vibration. And it was interesting to me that it was just, and another man told me exactly the same story, that it just happened automatically. So what I'm saying by that is, the God and Gurus, Ananda is a place where the blessings of the masters are made manifest. And there's a specific vibration. And in order to meld into the family, you actually meld into that vibration. And when you meld into that vibration, you have what you are looking for. But it comes through a lot, through all our relationships with each other. Does that make sense? Do you have any thoughts or comments or experiences about that that are relevant? Yes, Dad?
I'd like to add, I think it is that unconscious response because I was the opposite. I don't have that social butterfly kind of thing at all. And I found that when I came to Ananda, it's like the other people did it for me. Huh. And they came up to me and helped me with that. So.
Well, that is true.
There is, I guess because I was relating
to the masters.
Right away, yeah.
That's actually.
I never thought about it. But now that you say that.
No, that's true. You were always shy and quiet, but you were always right there from the very start. Yeah, so it was, oh, there she is, kind of energy. The Darlene-shaped hole has been filled. No, it's very true. Good point. From the opposite side. Yeah. Any other comments or thoughts? You'll take it?
I think I do come to the temple, but I seem to be praying to God. So it's like I kind of know about the masters, but when I'm not really in touch with the masters, so I'm thinking like, so does that mean I'm not going to be in sync with
them? No, that's right. Don't be shy.
That means like I'm excluding this, what we just described, how that helped.
Actually, that's a very good question, Tigist.
And I just want to add also, growing up, I was raised as a Coptic Orthodox. So in addition to believing the Old and the New Testament, we have a lot of sects, and I never really paid attention to the sects. It was kind of different to my upbringing, because nobody, until I came to the United States, then there's like, follower of Christ, the evangelical Christian, and I felt like, oh, okay, this is what I was missing when I was back home, because I was, like, confused which saint should I follow, St. Michael,
right.
St. Gabriel. So I feel like I'm in that situation here because of the masters. And
Okay, now, the first and most important thing to say is everything that we think about God and gurus is just made up with our minds. It's like the actual realization of their vibration and their presence has to transcend what we think about them. So a great deal of what we think amuses God and gurus, because it's sort of like we're a little bit like children and we just put whatever definitions we want on things. So whether you are praying to God or whether you're praying to the gurus, whether you consciously relate to the gurus or not, they've brought you to this place and they're taking care of you and they don't really care what you think. And we just have this extremely personality-related point of view, And over time, if you feel drawn and stay here, it will probably clarify itself to you in a way that will come out of your own heart. Because whether or not you have an idea of the gurus as such, what you're being drawn to is their emanation. Because the particular expression of divinity is defined by this particular ray, which is a sort of another way of talking about it. What I always say to everyone is just be sincere. And if anything inspires you and draws you back, then just follow that and everything else will follow. It will come to you in its own time, in its own way, if it's meant to, and otherwise it doesn't make any difference. You know, people say, I'm a follower of Jesus, I'm uncomfortable with Yogananda, I'm a Jew, I'm uncomfortable with Jesus, you know, Babaji's the one I like, and I just say, fine, doesn't make any difference. I don't believe in reincarnation, no problem. You know, just sit in the temple, be inspired, take what's real for you, and offer the rest to God and let Him work it out. Generally speaking, it all comes clear, but it can take years. You know, there's always the people who 10 years later finally become disciples, and just this is the way it is. Any other comments or thoughts? We're going to come back to this aspect of it in a few minutes. Yeah.
Well, most people start out with the classes, meditation,
right.
1, 2, 3, or do they start out coming to church?
They come out, start out anywhere. We try to describe it as a big wheel.
Yeah.
And you just come onto it wherever you want to. It doesn't make any difference.
I know. I didn't really know a lot about the masters, but I saw a class schedule. I think I picked it up.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I thought, well, you know, I just got to do something different, and I saw Meditation 1. You know, I'm just going to take this year, and I'm going to go through this series.
Yeah.
And then we got to the part where David said, okay, now you have to become a disciple, or
yeah.
You can't go any further. I said, what? And a disciple? Oh, my gosh. I couldn't even believe it. I just thought, oh my gosh, I've got to make this big decision.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I thought, well, I don't want to give up, you know, because uh-huh. I like what the direction this is going in.
Yeah.
No,
that's exactly, yeah, that's right. I mean, so some people come in through another door because they don't want to make that decision, or sometimes God tricks you like He tricked you.
Well, you know, all the readings, you know, it's always talking about discipleship, and uh-huh. I keep saying, am I worthy enough?
Yeah.
Do they really want me?
Yeah, well, that's a good question.
You know, those are the things.
That's the question that a lot of people ask.
Yeah, it's
not a question of whether I want the guru, but is he going to take me?
Yeah.
Yes, my answer to that is we'll just be at the end of the line, but you can still be in the line. You know,
I feel like I'm good because I'm doing all the readings.
Yeah. Well, it just happens on its own. And yeah. And so I don't want to so the end of all of that to come to is when we started really trying to say this, we wanted to reinvent what we called it. And the word community is really what we're talking about. And we've always been hampered by the word community because it's in our minds has meant a physical place, but community is not just a physical place. So the first sort of new idea or beginning of a new reality for us is what you're becoming a member of is the Ananda community for self-realization. And you're not just joining a church, you're becoming a member of the community for self-realization, the Ananda community, because it has certain characteristics, it has a certain feeling to it, and the dogmas and the principles and everything about it is less important than what it actually feels to you. And when you become a member of, I'm going to write it on the board so we can just look at it, so these words can kind of, you know, just in our minds. So, you know, what you're really becoming of, you're a member of, and then it's the Ananda. Now, of course, I got a pen that doesn't write. Ananda community for self-realization. Thank you, Graham. Graham makes my life work. I'm so grateful. He lives right next door, and I can just kind of cry out the window. And he'll Ananda community for self-realization. So it's not just any community, and it's not, you know, it has a very specific reason why you're part of it. And we're just taking away the word community as a physical place, even though this is also the community. We've thought of different words to call this physical place. But you might also live in the residential community. But whether you live here or not, you're a member of the community, because that's really what we're doing with each other. And the wonderful thing about this that we like so much is once you make the community not a physical place, a community is just the people. So what you've become part of is a group of people. You're not part of an organization. You're not even really part of a church, exactly. You're part of a community of people that help one another. And what we help each other toward is self-realization. That's your commitment. But you've made this commitment not only for self-realization, but to be part of a community of people who are all working for self-realization, and the path that we're following is the Ananda path. The other thing about being part of a community is, you see, it doesn't happen automatically. Like, you're a part of the community if you commit yourself to it, if you participate in it. And if you don't participate in the community, you're really not much part of it. You don't have any automatic reality here. So from the point of view of those of you who have, you know, recently become involved and wanted to be part of this, this is what you're actually part of. Okay? Yes, Marilyn?
I'm thinking, being involved in Ananda, does that have to be in a physical sense?
No. Because you see, a community is also a community of hearts and spirit.
Okay.
So you can become of course, as we go through this, we'll start listing out what that means, what the traditions and flow and characteristics of people who are part of this community are about. Okay? And the first one is, and I'll just put it over here, you know, I choose to be a member. I choose to be a member of this community, a member, and I won't write it out again, of the Ananda Community for Self-Realization, in order to deepen my relationship with God and also with the gurus. Now, we're not declaring that you have to become a disciple. And we do have to put the word gurus there, because the whole Ananda path, once we say Ananda, we have Master, we have Babaji, we have Jesus, we have all of those great souls. We have Swami Kriyananda, who's not part of that official lineage, but is the inspiring force here. So you want to make your relationship deeper. You want to make your relationship to deepen, I forgot, and strengthen. So you want your relationship with God and gurus to be deep and strong. And still, it's in your hands what that looks like, although we're going to talk about it. So you're becoming a member of a community for self-realization for this purpose.
Does member mean a member of the church, official member of the church?
Well, you're official member of the community. And we'll list out what those... Before we're done today, we'll list out that's where the 12 verbs come. 12 active things that you can do that would make you part of that. Okay, does this make sense? Does this strike a chord in your heart? It becomes very simple all of a sudden. If this is your desire and this is your community, then there's obvious and good reasons to declare yourself a part of it. Okay, any thoughts or comments about
that? So often we've used the... I don't know what it is. Preposition. That word "for" just leaped out at me. We've so often in so many contexts said "of," but "for" is an active process.
Right.
We know what we're heading for.
This, I give credit to Sean Mishore for this in Los Angeles. He came up with this, and when I saw it, I thought, "That's it. We're community for self-realization." It was just brilliant. It took me a little while to figure out where we were going to use it, but we're very. Openly and enthusiastically plagiarizing each other's good ideas. It's part of the community. All ideas are universal, not individually rooted. Thoughts are universal. I'm always amused. I'll pick up somebody's brochure and I'll say, gee, that's a very nice expression. Oh, I wrote that.
just cycle back.
Somebody else is using it. Okay. So this is really simple, and it becomes easier, doesn't it, Art, already? To just tell people what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Well,
pardon me?
I don't know if people will understand.
Oh, now, will they understand and will you say it? No, not necessarily. But at least in your own heart, you know why you're here and why you're doing it. Okay.
This community seems like a physical group of people. And you were saying, your question was something about it. Does it have to be a physical?
But I don't know if it necessarily, I mean, because... this is the sort of thing that context is gradually changing, because there are so many online communities now that especially the younger generation is not going to automatically interpret that as a physical location. It could be a discussion group online. You know, it could be a community. There are a lot of ways to be a community. So I think it's a good word.
And in India, they use the word community a lot to speak of the cultural group that you're part of, you know, whichever, the Bengali community or the, you know, the Kashmiri Shivite community or whatever it is. It means cultural group more. And that's correct, isn't it? I mean, those are good and bad words. And Ananda has used the word exclusively physically. And that's why we realized that we were shooting ourselves in the foot by that. Because especially in this, I mean, at Ananda Village, Ananda Village is the residential community, but here it's not so at all. That's why we were using the word church for a long time. But church is inadequate. Community is really what we are. And even when Swami started talking about how many people were part of these communities, you know, the people who live there, I mean, in a community like Ananda Palo Alto Community for Self-Realization, you know, some of our most dedicated people do not have apartments at this address. But they're heart and soul of the community, and that was when we began to realize the word was just wrong.
Actually, when I first started with Ananda, and we were talking about that, was 1987, back then there was this idea that if you were really serious on the path, you moved up to Ananda Village.
Right.
Mm. And that, I never had a desire to do that.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of a kind of a underflow, if that's what you were, you know, if you were really serious on this path, that's what you did.
Right.
And, you know, since I didn't fit into that, I mean, I'm glad all of this is, you know, we got the community here and all that.
Right.
Because, you know, what do you do if you don't want to, you know,
wanna do that?
Serious about it? You know, I mean, it wasn't a big thing, but there was a little bit of an undercurrent of that. Mm-hmm. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, the reality of that was that prior to, there was an ashram in San Francisco in the center, there was one in Sacramento, but the mindset of Ananda, you know, vibrationally, was that Ananda meant Ananda Village. Mm-hmm. And so it was just the way things were. And in fact, once we started really developing these urban centers, all the urban colony leaders developed this annoying habit, because people would say Ananda, and they would mean Ananda Village, but they would just say Ananda. And then I or others would say, village. You know, they would interrupt, we'd interrupt a sentence because someone would say, well, you know, at Ananda we do things, village. You know, and now people will say Ananda Village. But at that time you said Ananda, it meant Ananda Village, because there was no mindset that there was another reality. Of course, 2.5 decades have passed. That's important for you all to understand, that this has happened within the memory of the people sitting in the room. And therefore, it's a very fluid reality, and that's why I'm presenting all this to you, but I really am asking you, because we're all making this up, but we're making it up for a long time to come. So it needs to really be true to your experience, because this is a reality for your experience. You know, my life experience by this point is unique. And, Darlene and Biraj's and Shanti's, I mean, ours is a little different than those of you who are coming in now. So this really has to work for you. This has to really represent you, because it's your reality that we're trying to focus. Okay.
It's interesting that that I don't know if it's necessarily an expectation or something, but there's that can still happen. I think. I mean, I went through a phase last year, maybe, when all of a sudden just all sorts of people were asking me if I was moving up to the village. I'd never said anything about it or considered it. I mean, after a few of them, I was going, "Gosh, should I?" Yeah. But somehow a lot of people got into their heads at the same time that I was just going to head on up there.
I didn't realize that. And I'm not saying that it was a bad thing that people wanted to be, you know, didn't fit my...
Yeah, but it is awkward if you don't feel like it's your thing and you feel like it's expected.
Well, sometimes there's this, you know, well, you were young and unemployed, which is part of why they don't you might leave. You appeared to be camping, so it looked like you could just pack your car and go. But nonetheless, but it's still but this is actually, this is a significant point you're asking. This was part of what founding these colonies had to do with. If there aren't many ways to express dedication, this teaching will never expand. You know, if the only way you can express dedication is to leave behind what you were doing and go live in a rural community somewhere, how will this path ever expand? And there must be people, we said to ourselves, whose karma it is to be in an urban colony and be the vibrant force that makes that work for many other people. So it is, but it's entirely personal. You're part of this community. It's for self-realization. You can be part of it anywhere. That's why I didn't write Palo Alto, but this is specifically here. But what you're really joining is the Ananda community for self-realization.
Yeah. When I went to spent some time for the first time up in Ananda Village, mm-hmm. I felt like I was part. That was just part of
exactly.
the Ananda community.
Exactly. And you join, you come in through one door, but you're part of all of it. I was looking at all these old pictures again, and, you know, many of the people in these pictures from 25 years ago are not here. But they're in India, they're in Europe, they're in Portland, they're in Seattle, they're at Ananda Village. I mean, they've just taken up residence in another branch of the family. They've gone to live with their other cousin somewhere. Yeah. So you do. This is worldwide. Once you enter this, I mean, right now we have these friends from India, a dozen people of the Ananda community of Gurgaon, for self-realization in Gurgaon, India. And, you know, they're just like us. They're citizens of the nation of self-realization, which is our real unity. All right. I'm going to move on because there's a certain amount we need to cover. Let's see. Go ahead. Is somebody about to speak? I heard somebody breathe like there was words coming out. Was it you, Tickets?
No.
Okay. Oh, no. No, it wasn't. Okay. So, the first premise is this, and now there's, and that, now once you're doing this, then the question is, in the Ananda community, well, that's useless. Oh, was that a non-erasable?
Most of them you can't erase.
Okay. Once you decide that you want to be part of this community and you want to deepen your relationship with God and gurus, this is a particular path. This isn't just generally. You know, if you want to just sort of generally be a spiritual person and generally sort of follow anything that comes along, and then this really probably isn't your community. You don't have to be absolutely without options, but we do have a way. So, the next premise of after you want and strengthen your relationship is, you know, I choose to be a member because I aspire, you know, develop a personal spiritual practice. And that is, again, here's another characteristic of what our community is about. Our community for self-realization involves a personal spiritual practice. Now, you know, we had choices when we came to these. We didn't say that I want to be a member because I'm a disciple of Yogananda. We just said I want to deepen and strengthen my relationship. It's personal. We're not going to say here that you have to follow a certain spiritual practice, because we could say because I want to be a Kriya Yogi or take Kriya Yoga. Of course, most of the people who get involved in this community will end up following that path, but not everyone. And certainly, it's not a prerequisite. It will grow out of your relationship to the community if it's right for you or whatever is appropriate. So I aspire to develop a personal spiritual practice, and that's why I choose to become a member of this community. Now, also, I'll go over here and see if this board comes off any easier. Oops. I'm writing these things because I know that if you can see them, they look different than if you just hear them. That personal spiritual practice in the context of the Ananda community for self-realization. Oh, help me. This thing is coming off. That's wrong.
It should
do. It's not high enough.
It needs to go up higher.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And, why don't we lower it so it's against the bottom part and then it'll stay? Yeah. Thank you. Okay. This is why I always use new batteries when I talk, because Me and these things, everything mechanical, I don't really function well with. Okay, but the characteristic of personal spiritual practice in the context of Ananda has four elements to it. The first is love, which is obvious, and these are verbs now. To love, to serve, to meditate. And we actually talked about the word meditate, and I'll talk to you about it in a minute. And then the last word is to attune. Okay, so these are the characteristics of a personal spiritual practice in the context of the Ananda community for self-realization. And, you know, everyone who's part of this community needs to in some way embrace these things. These are the first four of the 12 verbs that we talk about. So when we started wanting to define what those words mean, we went to the writings of both Swami and Master and started coming up with ways of describing it. So for the phrase, you know, love, that, okay, as a member of this community, part of my personal spiritual practice is to love. And, of course, the first love is the underlying. And not all spiritual paths are involved with love. Involved with just watching the mind, controlling the emotions, detaching from this world, affirming that this world is a dream. But the Ananda path is a very heart-centered path. That's why music and chanting and devotion and prayer are all such a part of it. Swami writes, he says, don't be formal with God. Play with him. Tease him if you like. Scold him if you feel to. Though always with love. Remember, he is your very own. He is the nearest of the near, the dearest of the dear. He is closer to you than the very thoughts with which you pray to. Now, later, we'll take this concept of love and bring it in to one another. But the first premise of our personal spiritual path is this love for God in just the spirit that Swami describes here, which is lighthearted, spontaneous, intimate. And as I was saying earlier, relationships with each other, everything else follows from that. Because we have that, and when you stop and think about it, you know, one of the characteristics of the Ananda path is this really open-heartedness. Our friends from India were commenting about just coming here and just the sort of open-hearted way that they're greeted and smiled, helped, you know, and without any formality, without any sense of qualification. And we all sort of looked at each other like, yeah, I mean, but of course. But when you actually stop and think about it, that really is a characteristic of our path. And that really comes, well, it comes from Master, but it's been exemplified for us by Swami Kriyananda, whom you see him now, he's more elderly and he's of necessity. He can't be as available as he used to be, but he defined and trained all the rest of us in this. Welcome, you know, here's my house, you know, go into the kitchen, make yourself at home. This equal sense of our shared divinity, which comes from our own actual idea of how God is with us and how we are with God, which is if we can be that relaxed and informal and intimate with God, what is there to pretend with each other? You know? And even when we got the church that we have now, that beautiful big sanctuary, and it's a big, impressive, and the altar's really large because the room is really large, but even still, we were so happy that it wasn't inaccessible. You know, and in fact, we actually brought the back wall forward a little bit more, but we still wanted a very large stage for the choir and for the school plays and so on, but we brought the back wall forward a little bit, and you know, there's no railings. We just tried to make it as easy as possible, so it's large for the room, but you don't have this sense of barrier. I went to the Memorial Church, Stanford Memorial Church, a week or two ago to see Pavani, is a dancer, and a friend of hers was part of this liturgical dance. So they were putting on this Episcopal Lutheran service, and she was dancing. So we went to watch her dance. I mean, Stanford Memorial Church is a really phenomenal building, but I leaned over to the others, and I said, you know, let's never build a church like this. I mean, it's way too big. And there's so many barriers to get to the altar, and then the little minister has to march up this little set of stairs and stand in this little box. There was this Reader's Digest story that I just loved, one of those true Reader's Digest stories. A man has taken his young daughter to some very formal, I think, Episcopal church, and the minister had climbed a very high number of stairs and was in this little pulpit box way up at the top, and he was hellfire and brimstone out of the mouths of babes, and he was ranting and raving and telling them they were all going to go to hell. And finally, the little child pulls on her father's sleeve, and he says with great, like this, "Daddy, Daddy, what will we do if he gets loose?" So we don't want that, you know. But everything follows from this, and it also means that, you know, if love is the basis of everything, then our responses to each other, our responses to ourselves, our responses to our own difficulties. Also, love is accessible to everyone. You don't have to have a big brain. You don't have to be real philosophical. You don't have to be real intellectual about it. Rajasi Janakananda, his picture's back here. He was Master's most advanced male disciple. He was became a fully liberated soul in this lifetime. He was from Kansas. And when he prayed to Sri Yukteswar, you know, Yogananda's guru, he prayed Sir Rup Tetraji. That's what he called him. He couldn't pronounce his name. Sir Rup Tetraji. He would lead the prayers, you know, Sir Rup Tetraji. But Swamiji said when he meditated, he saw him, you know. It just didn't make any difference. And that's part of what we all have to understand. You don't have to know anything. You just have to feel it in your heart. That's your first spiritual practice, is to have this sense of closeness to God and this fearless closeness to God. Love casts out fear. Okay. Now, the second principle, though, is to serve. Because if we just say that this is what we feel, but we don't put any energy behind it, then that development is stunted. It's not just enough to have the feelings inside of us. That energy has to come out of us as well, and has to come out of us dynamically. And it's in putting our energy forward that all things begin to happen, once energy begins to flow. So you find also that the other aspect of what Ananda is about is service, because we make it happen. We're just a little tiny group of people, and we make it happen. And service can be, of course, within Ananda. Service can be an attitude you have toward everything you do, because bear in mind, this is your personal spiritual practice. And your personal spiritual practice is to love, and then to translate that love into service. So if you have work that you do, that's, you know, whatever work that you do, you can make that into a personal spiritual practice by understanding that all work is service. Sri Yukteswar says, as long as we breathe the air of this earth, we are under obligation to render grateful service, is how he describes it. Swami writes about this extremely beautifully in his Manifesting Through the Power of Yoga, his Happiness and Success course. And for service, we say here, service is ennobling. It opens the heart to divine love and enables that love to flow out to others. The more you can surrender in joyful service, the freer you will know yourself to be inside. In service to others, our ideal is to serve God equally in all. And so this helps us understand what the attitude of service is. It isn't just that I take care of you, or you, or you, because you're my husband, you're my wife, you're my friend, you're my client. I'm taking care of God in everyone, and that's what makes it a spiritual practice. And since God is equally present, then we can have this open-hearted, loving attitude toward God in all. Serving also the guru and serving God is one way to do it, is by the divine presence. And the other, and it really needs to be said, is that you serve the work. Because if we're going to be deepen and strengthen our relationship to God and to gurus, if you think about how to become a good friend to someone, you help that person do the things that are important to them, don't you? You know, you take their daughter shopping, you help them redecorate their house, you know, you comfort them if something difficult has happened. They have realities in their lives, your friends, and you serve them by supporting them through whatever it is that they're trying to do. Well, God and Guru are our friends. And so in order to deepen our friendship and our relationship, and this is about strengthening and deepening our relationship with God and Gurus, we have to do that which is important to them. And Master came to this world to bring self-realization to the world. Swami Kriyananda was commissioned by Master to help manifest this work in the world. When I first came to Ananda Village in 1971, I was very much there to learn from Swami Kriyananda. And my attitude toward the community and the work that was doing, I mean, I was working in the kitchen, I was helping. But my inner attitude was one, and actually I was really, of proud indifference to the work that he was doing, because I was there for him. And somewhere along the line, it occurred to me that he was just pouring out his life's blood to establish this community, and that I wasn't being a very good friend to him, because I was taking from him the parts that I wanted, but I wasn't giving anything to what was important to him. And so that was my first thought, that maybe there was something wrong with my attitude. And then when I began to think about it more deeply, I realized, you know, serving the guru is a very powerful spiritual practice, but, you know, Yogananda's not in the body, and most of us are not even around Swami Kriyananda to serve him as a disciple of Master. You know, we can't make dinner and bring water and carry a blanket or anything like that. But to serve their physical body is very trivial compared to supporting the cause that they have given their lives for. So part of our spiritual practice as devotees to deepen our relationship with God and gurus is to facilitate that which they're trying to manifest in this world. We facilitate it by being an usher on Sunday, because somebody has to do it, by, you know, cleaning the candle holders so that they'll be pretty and ready, by making altars, by cooking food, by giving money, because money is a fundamental part of what we have to do, and we'll talk in a few moments even more about that part of it, but we have to take responsibility for making it happen. And that is part of our spiritual practice, because if you're a member of a community, you have to facilitate the goals of that community, and the goal is for self-realization, and part of the way we are blessed is by giving. Does that all make sense? Yes, Judy?
It's obvious now, but maybe to a new person it might not be, that it's a developmental process, like you just said when you were on the knowing.
Right.
You didn't feel that way at first, but then
it gradually
kind of naturally occurs the more you
exactly
you're along your own path that you want to serve. It just comes natural, I think. But the new person, I think it might be kind of scary to think, oh, right, no, now I've got to serve.
Right, it is. But
add this to, you know, everything else. Right.
It's true. Mm-hmm. And there's always the balance point between inspiring people with the challenge that might be asked of them and keeping that challenge within boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
And you're absolutely right. And that's one of the reasons why in defining each of these, we've just talked about the quality itself. So the ennobling quality of service, serving God equally in all, and then understanding this is my personal spiritual practice. So once again, it's like if I want to deepen my relationship, how am I going to express this?
So that's general, and then
right,
a new person can get to the
right
specifics as
yeah
they develop.
Right.
Is this for the new people that are just kind of going to the church that haven't really committed to you know serving or being really very involved?
No, this is after you've been there for a while.
Oh, okay.
This is not meant to be when they have to ask who are the people on the altar and why do we have gurus. It's more like, I feel at home here. This feels like my place. I really want to be more serious about this. And actually, we'll come to this. You reach the point where I don't want to just participate. I want to really be part of this. I want to be a member of this community.
Well, I know I see people, I can think of at least one right now that, you know, comes every week, but I know that I feel like I have to be really careful and not going too far.
Then this is not for her.
Yeah.
No, we're not making any pretense about, this is not for somebody who's just walked in off the street. This is for people who are trying to be serious about mm-hmm being a member of the Ananda community of self-realization. So we don't mind being honest. Because if you want to have a personal spiritual practice, you have to serve. Now, serving Ananda is a good idea if it's your community, but many of us spend a great deal of our life doing many other things. So your personal spiritual practice, see, the power of being part of this community is that you take these ideals at wherever you are. You know, I'm looking at you because I know you have a profession, and Graham tutors high school students to help them with their SATs, you know. But everything can be part of your personal spiritual practice if you do it with an attitude of serving God and others.
So the people that come just every Sunday, and that's their total involvement, we just kind of nurture them at the level that
we serve them. We love and serve them.
That
would be our responsibility as members of this community, is to be appropriately welcoming to people who come to visit our community until such time, I mean, in the hope that if it's right for them, that they'll be inspired, and they'll be largely inspired by what they receive from us. So everyone who's part, a member of this community, has a duty then to love and serve those who come to visit our community and welcome them as family, because somebody welcomed you. You know, it was the service of others that brought you here. Yeah. Okay. And, yes, all right.
My observation on this is that you come in, become a part of the community pretty much with all four of these things in neutral.
Uh-huh.
And as you go...
That's a good way to put it.
More, uh-huh. You might have a little bit more in the love area at
yes.
first.
Yeah.
Or you might be a server
yeah.
person at
yeah.
first. Or you might just really get into meditating at first. But
right.
as you go along into the path, you increase in all of these more and more.
Exactly.
And more.
That's exactly
yeah,
right.
That's what I'm noticing.
That's exactly right. And it helps to know, and this is, after you've been here for a while, you think, how can I get deeper in this? Okay, this is a way. And so your personal spiritual practice, these are the elements of the Ananda spiritual, Ananda community for self-realization. This is our practice. And meditation is a part of that. Now, naturally, you know, our primary practice is the teaching of Yogananda and the practice of Kriya, but not everyone... I mean, you can't start there. I mean, you can't take Kriya the minute you arrive. All the meditation practices that you learn are the structure of Kriya Yoga, but not everyone can meditate. So meditation also means inner communion. And so it's not just the formal, the formal practice, but it's the fact of this being an internal path. Okay, and actually what I read here I'm not quite sure is exactly right, because we say, in daily meditation, penetrate the veil of the senses, pass beyond them to the soul peace within. In the temple of inner silence, you will find proof positive of God's existence. So that may be exactly what we want to say, but the point being, this is not a dogma, and you're not saved just because you come. But your personal spiritual practice is to have an inner life. And the formal practice of meditation, of course, is highly recommended as the means to do it, but inner communion is the point. In one way or another, God is within you. Yes, Stacey.
I was just going to say something I really like about the path versus, you know, I mean, at least for me, I was raised in a certain religion, and there are definitely a lot of strong points about it. But something that I really like about coming to Ananda is it's like attraction rather than promotion.
Uh-huh.
So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just
that's a good word.
It touches the soul rather than forcing it.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. And meditation has to be understood as part of it. Because if you don't experience it within yourself, and the more assiduously you cultivate that experience, and that's what the purpose of Kriya and the other techniques is to... make a deliberate practice, and not just hope, you know, that somehow or another I'll stumble on it. That's part of the practice too. Okay? And then the fourth one of our spiritual practices is attunement. Because we're trying to become in harmony with a vibration that's already there. The power of this path is that we receive it. It's the grace of God, and it's the deliberate wanting to come in harmony with it, the power of attraction, as you're trying to say. You know, people say it, they put it in words like, I just feel good here, because there's something that exists. And this is part of our spiritual path, is based on the fact that this presence of Satchitananda is there, and it's always there for us. All we have to do is put ourselves on its wavelength. We don't have to become good enough. We don't have to overcome our sins. We don't have to be cleansed by the blood of Christ. We are a radio receiving station. The vibrations are always there. Specifically, the vibrations of these masters. Ananda is a place where the blessings of the masters are made manifest. So part of our spiritual practice is that we don't create it ourselves, we attune to it. And what we've written here is, grace must be received by tuning into it. It comes to us not so much by God's will as by our own. Offer yourself to Him. He will always be there waiting for you. So in our spiritual practice, we love, we serve, we meditate, we have inward communion, and we attune ourselves to the vibrations of God's grace that are just waiting for us to want to receive them. As many as received Him, to them gave He the power to become the sons of God, St. John says about Jesus. Does that make sense? And Yogananda writes even that attunement is more important than any other spiritual practice, because all spiritual practices are designed to put us on the wavelength of the masters. And none of those practices will benefit us nearly as much as if we combine them with the desire to be in tune with the particular flow of grace that flows through the Ananda community. Okay? I'm going to take a break. Coffee and tea are in the other room. There's water on the table. Let's take about 10 minutes, and nobody can go anywhere, so just, you know, mill about, and then we'll go on. Okay. Okay. Don't worry about the rug, if that was what you were...
Yeah.
Oh,
well, I've got the same color, and somebody spilling the spilled coffee the other day. On
no, we have it cleaned every 6 months, and everything comes off of it.
Okay. So. Yeah, I spilled fruit punch or whatever it was at Christmas that one time.
I poured spinach soup on it, and there was a little child carrying this bowl of strawberries, and, you know, now be careful with that, sit down and eat that, and then I turned around and whacked it. You know, little kids holding it, I just hit it and just threw it all over. It was instant karma. Swamiji is fond of saying, it's just a thing, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay, now, do we have any comments or questions about anything that we've done so far that we haven't made yet before we go on? Amit hasn't spoken yet, so let's let him speak first. No, that's not true. He did speak.
No, before I can associate some action to the first three. I cannot completely comprehend when we say attunement.
Oh, no, that's a very good question. That's actually a very good question. Let me try to think about that. It underlies all the other three. Because we're either acting under the impulse of our own ego and just behaving according to our own normal thoughts, or we recognize that now that I'm on this spiritual path and have taken up this other way of thinking, I am now an instrument of something other than just my own ego. And it's that statement we probably should put in there, thoughts are universal, not individual. We don't create them, we attune to them. And far more than we realize, we're always being influenced by something. And so what are we going to choose to be influenced by? Now we want to attune our thoughts and our feelings and our inspirations to God and Guru. And even when you meditate and even when you serve, something will occur to you. And so the question is, where is that coming from and what level is that coming from? So the act of constantly trying to receive superconsciously instead of just floating with whatever we're accustomed to, vibrations we're being on. Does that make sense to you? It's fundamental to your spiritual practice. And it's really the first practice, because everything else will follow if you're attuned. And no matter how hard you work, if you haven't attuned yourself, you will make very little actual progress. It's also because attunement is about, attunement is really the actual surrender of yourself. Because what we hold on to above all is the habits of the mind, and we hold on to both an attachment and a, a pride in what we already are. And so recognizing that, no, I can just let all of this go and attune to a higher vibration is what all the rest of it's about. I mean, when you love someone, what you really try to do is you try to attune yourself to them, don't you? Your husband, your wife, you try to feel your child. When you serve someone, what you're trying to do is attune. When you meditate, what you're trying to do is attune. So now we want to attune to the grace of God and not merely to more superficial things. Does that make sense? Yeah. What are you going to say?
Say, like, you can also think about attuning to the other people who are all trying to do this directly, and it's sort of an attitude, like, if you go into, you know, if you're doing stuff with other Ananda people and sort of going, like, why are we doing this way? It feels kind of weird. Instead of just saying, like, I like to do things like this, just sort of take the attitude, well, let's see what we're all trying to do, and be a little more open to what's going on.
Right. Darlene, would you give me a pen from David's desk? I want to just make a couple of notes here, because these are very important points. No, it's exactly right. You're also actually attuning to the other members of the community, or you're attuning to the divine as it flows through them.
Yeah, because they're all aiming at the same thing, so it can be a stepping stone. If attuning to God seems a little bit of a leap.
Yeah, it's true, actually, and it's more, I wanted to get the word grace in here, but it's more than that. It's really trying to understand what this community is about. And sometimes when people come in with too strong of a self-affirmation, and the self with a small s, sometimes that is a real block to people being able to integrate or feel at home, is that they're just always affirming what they already are. And they're not really accepting the fact that, gee, I could become somebody completely different. I had a very fun experience when I came to Ananda in the early 70s, and I worked in the kitchen at the what is now the seclusion retreat, but was the only retreat we had. And when I was there in that first summer or two, this couple from New York came in, and they were there for a number of weeks, and they worked a lot with me in that kitchen. And I didn't have the name Asha at that point, so I had another name too. And then a few years later, Swami went to New York, and I went to New York with him, and we stayed at the home of that couple. And when we were introduced to them, I said, oh, I know you. No, they said, we've never met. I said, no, I know you. We worked in the kitchen together. No, that was someone else, they said. Three times they said that to me before I figured out, I'm not the same person anymore. They don't recognize me. Just say yes, for heaven's sakes. Yeah, so I just said, yeah, sure. I mean, I know for a fact that I did know them, but it was actually very interesting to me because, I mean, I was only a few years. I didn't really look that different, but I had attuned myself a lot more, and I really had become someone else. The self-affirmation had given way to attunement. And that's what your spiritual practice is, because, see, we're imitative now. This is the wonderful word Swami used. We're not actually original. Original is coming from your point of origin. Now our personalities are what we've just absorbed from who knows where. We need to get back to our point of origin, which is what happens when we attune to God and Guru. We become more of who we really are. And that's why it's such an important spiritual practice, because, see, that's all we're doing. All the spiritual path is the word smriti, which is a great Sanskrit word, S-M-R-I-T-T-I, smriti. And it means remembrance. Yeah, we just remember. Oh my goodness, I thought I was an ugly duckling, but indeed I'm a swan. And it's not like we were an ugly duckling, we just forgot that we were a swan. So attunement is also remembrance. It's smriti. Well, you always want to say smitty in English, but okay. Anything else? Yes, Graham.
I have a question about the meditate one. You were saying that it isn't necessarily literally meditation in the techniques that we teach,
right?
But it's about inner communion. But what's, like, if it isn't literally the meditation techniques, what's another verb? Like, what's, again, similar to Amit's question?
This was a discussion back and forth. We need to tell people that meditation is really where they're going, that they need to meditate. It would be untrue to our path if we didn't say people need to meditate. I soften it a little because I know that a lot of people find meditation difficult even when they love this path. So we played with the word commune, but decided to stay with meditation. Was that what you were asking for? Just communion, inner communion is really what we're talking about.
But that's not a verb.
No, it isn't.
So what I was getting at is, like, are there alternative verbs besides meditate to get you to the inner communion?
Well, there might be, but when we're actually going to say that your personal spiritual practice, it involves these four things, we just want to say meditate.
Okay. And if you can't, if you're the type of personality or person who can't just really sit down and meditate a lot, do whatever you can do with a meditative frame of mind, and we'll just go with that.
And meditate 5 minutes, we'll bargain with you. Yeah. But one should still one's mind and practice a technique and focus every day, if it's only for 1 minute, just to acknowledge that.
Would it, like, prayer, like a time that you could...
But prayer is not exactly meditation. The word prayer, it's very interesting because you're all bringing up the same ideas that have been through a lot of conversation. And the question of prayer... The word pray doesn't actually appear anywhere. Attune is close to prayer. Love is close to prayer, to pray. And meditate includes prayer. But prayer alone doesn't say it, because prayer is the I-thou relationship. And even though that's a key element, meditate is inner communion, which is that it's my own inner reality that I'm experiencing. I'm entering into the inner silence and I'm discovering who I really am. And naturally, we pray to get to that. And it's fundamental, and we have to make sure that prayer is understood enough. I think you're completely right. It didn't quite make it into the top four here. but it's implied, yes.
It seems like meditation and attunement are the same thing.
Well...
Except meditation is like a technique to get to attunement?
Yes, and attunement is a technique to help you get to meditation.
Oh, okay, so they're a little bit different.
They're a little bit different. Okay. But yes, you're absolutely right. They're very closely related. Yeah, they're very closely related.
Okay.
But it seemed worth saying by itself, yes.
I also look at attunement, and correct me, uh-huh. Attune being attuned to what's around you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Stepping away from the ego.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what the word means. Now, the idea, of course, of all of these words is that we all have this conversation, that it's not as if you understand it immediately. But that we do just do exactly this, that, oh, that's interesting, what does that really mean? And then we come together and we talk about it, and then... As the years pass, because this is, to be a member of this community can be a lifelong commitment, can be a lives-long commitment. Just as Art said very well at the beginning, you're oriented more easily in one way or another. You might be a contemplative type who doesn't really like to be that active. You might be a more dry kind of person who likes the meditation techniques, but love doesn't come so naturally. Devotional practices are hard. Prayer is harder. You might be much more oriented toward prayer than service. You know, you can see. But over time, all of them will come into an understanding, and we learn from them. We wanted it to be not immediately accessible. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, attunement also, it seems like it can be done at times when meditation maybe isn't possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when you're driving,
exactly.
You realize, oh my gosh, I've kind of gotten... off the way or whatever.
Exactly.
And you can kind of get back on. Whereas yeah. You can't just meditate while you're
No, that's exactly the truth. And that's partly the relationship. Yeah.
I can understand it.
I've been trying to understand attunement for the last 40 years. So it's like, this is not like something, these are very expansive, simple words, but, oh, part of my spiritual practice is to attune. What can I attune to? How can I attune? To love, serve, meditate, and attune. So you make this, we don't have it for you now, but eventually we'll give you some nice, you know, printed things where you can hold these thoughts really clearly in front of you. Yes?
Just one comment about trying to understand attunement and everything. You also need to keep in mind, from my point of view, keep in mind that, you know, information won't work.
Uh-huh.
A lot of this is, for the future, and
it's a frame of mind that, you know, the planet is shifting
to. That's true. That's true. Uh-huh.
You know, we're on that cusp where it might not always be that easy to really understand.
Right.
You know, from coming from Kali Yuga.
No, that's exactly right. You know, just the, what is the nature of the universe? Where do we come from? How is this world manifested? What does it mean to be a human being? I mean, all these questions. And see, also what this is also talking about, the word attune, and this is a characteristic of the Ananda community for self-realization, we acknowledge this powerful force that transcends the ego. You know, this isn't just about the ego getting... People try... There's this phrase I've actually heard, non-deistic spirituality. And I think it actually, I've heard this word, this phrase come out of the mouth of some very respected spiritual leaders. But we are not non-deistic. We are very frankly and totally God-oriented. And this is about attuning to consciousness much bigger than our own. And that's why attunement is fundamental to the Ananda community's personal spiritual practice. I'm transcending my ego. I'm not just expanding it. This isn't just a collective group of egos all sort of getting together and affirming a truth. No, no. This is something that it transcends us and exists, and we lift ourselves into it. And it descends in through grace and touches us. And so when we're both trying to understand and explain it, that's very fundamental. Okay? So, is it all right if I go on from here? But thank you all, and it's very interesting. So then the other, let me find my equipment here. Okay. This is now our third concept. Starting from deepen and strengthen my relationship with God and gurus. And the first way we do this is by developing a personal spiritual practice. And then the second concept is this one, which is that to learn... Oh boy, these pens or something is not working. To learn and live. Learn and live the teachings of self-realization. And, you know, this is self-realization. This is all about, not in a general sense, but the Ananda expression of these, which would mean Master and Swami Kriyananda above all. Or this line of gurus. Okay, learn and live the teachings of self-realization. It's not sufficient to learn them, you must also live them. So this also defines for us several things that are very important to understand, which is that there is a huge body of actual teachings related to this path. I don't know which it was.
Oh,
I don't remember. That there's a huge body of teachings related to this path. Swami's written, you know, 140 books, and Master has a lot of interesting books, and there's a whole, like, world view associated with this. And we need to enter into this with a humble understanding that even if we're extremely well-versed in many other paths, this is a very specific line of teaching. And Swami Kriyananda and Master have really innovated the expression and really given us, you know, marvelous tools. And that we really need to apply ourselves and don't just think once we have a few concepts that we understand. And to this end, we have classes, we have inspirational services, we have satsangs with people, and then we have all these materials that we can work with as appropriate. We have recorded materials, we have written materials, we have conversational materials, whatever works for you. But then it's not just enough to be able to intellectually spout this. We need to learn these teachings in such a way that they actually affect the way we live. And that to be a member of this community will change the way you live. You know, your life may look the same, but within it you'll be living very differently. Because I see that people sometimes come on and they don't understand that you really do have to study. And, you know, there's just so many different things. And what we're actually going to do as part of this whole process, which was what we started last October, is we're going to try to take all that we offer and make it look more like a curriculum so that you'll really understand progressively how you go through this. It's kind of, it's disintegrated a little bit from that clarity. But in the meantime, there's 100, again, it's this big wheel. You can start wherever you like and just start slowly reading through. As one young woman complained when Swami asked her if she'd read this book of his or this book of his or this book, she said, it took you 45 years to write them. You know, and then pointing to some of us, she said, and you all got to read them one at a time as they came out, you know. I'm just buried under all this stuff. And it is the truth. So you just have to but slowly work through and realize, and if you're more of an intellectual, scholarly type, you can study a lot. But nonetheless, you need to be learning and find those things that will help you. And then figuring out, what does this really mean? Oh, if this is Dwapara Yuga ascending, what should I do? If I have tamasic, rajasic, and sattvic tendencies, how do I work with them? You know, what is Kriya and how do I actually practice it? Oh, I've been meditating from the belly chakra and I need to start meditating from the spiritual eye. You know, really learn and live. Because if you want to be part of this community, you need to get in the flow of what this community is. So, is that clear enough? I think that's pretty self-evident. So then here are the 4 points that go with under this one. And this is the learn and live together. The first one is focus. And we'll discuss these in a moment. Focus means several things. Focus, study, participate. This is the live. The first two are more or less the learn. And the last one is not, it's like a tune. It's not entirely clear, but the word is own. Okay? And that's the learning and living. So, I'll tell you how focus begins. Focus says, the ego sees everything through colored glasses tinted by desire. The first step toward wisdom is to remove those glasses and see everything impartially with an open mind and heart. And then we go on to say, truth is one, the paths to it are many, but in order to reach the goal, one must focus on one way of getting there. So part of being part of this community is not that we ask you to renounce all other affiliations or never read another book or, you know, never enter another church, but you really won't. We have to be fair. You're really not going to get deep into this teaching unless you focus on it. It's a bit of a no-brainer, but it isn't really, not these days. And so you have to think to yourself, as part of being, I choose to become a member because I want to learn and live the teachings of self-realization, so I need to focus on them. SRF, Self-Realization Fellowship, and Ananda are a whole lot more like each other than any of us are like anything else. So you start with that. You know, men and women are a lot more alike than any of us are like elephants or, you know, human beings are closer to the opposite gender than they are to other species. But nonetheless, there's still very distinct differences between men and women that you can see. So the difference between SRF and Ananda is the importance that SRF has placed on the relationship to the organization itself in your capacity to attract the blessings of the masters, and the importance SRF has placed on spiritual authority being placed in specific hands and only in those specific hands, and that authority coming down through a specific lineage, and that same authority not being available outside of that lineage.
Sounds like a dogma.
Well, yes. And if you want it in really simple terms, SRF is a lot more Catholic. They literally write in their literature, you know, this is the spiritual successor. They say not a person, but the president of SRF is the spiritual successor to Yogananda. Of course, there haven't been many presidents, but now Marina Lini, as the president of SRF, is the spiritual successor. So you see, the authority has been invested in the position rather than in the individual. And also in their footnotes to their edition of Autobiography of a Yogi, it speaks of the necessity specifically to receive Kriya through the SRF authorized channels. And they actually go so far as to say that Babaji's blessings are available to those who receive their Kriya through the authorized channel. And so that gives an importance to their entity that Ananda simply does not offer. Ours is magnetism, attunement creates authority. Now, self-evidently, we place a lot of respect in Swami Kriyananda, and we respect him, but we respect him for who he is, not for the position he holds. And the other aspect of that is any individual, by their own attunement, can have as much authority as their spiritual destiny gives them in or out of any organization. Okay? Everything after that is personality and fluff and style and doesn't make any difference. But those points really matter. Okay? And that was why they tried to annihilate us with lawsuits, is because we stand against that and we belie the truth of that, because if you can actually get inspiration outside of that organization, then their dogma is undermined. And that's why it was so important to eliminate us. I mean, you know, it was a very smart move on their part, from their point of view. That's why the Catholics have worked so hard to eliminate everyone for the same reason.
Now, I was just going to add to that. You know, it's the idea God can speak to you through anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know where it's going to come from. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Being such a rigid lineage is.
Right.
You know, I mean, God can speak to you through anyone.
Right. And, you know, that's a secure position for many people. They like that. So I think we serve different purposes. But they teach the same Kriya, you know. Okay? It's a good question. So, focus. Right. So, focusing on this path and working with this path is essential. Okay? But not, you, again, everything is how you feel it. Then the second point, of course, is study. And we wanted this to be clear there so that people don't think, don't misunderstand how deep and interesting this path is. You know, Swami's Gita commentary alone you could start and just read for the rest of your life, and you really never have to read anything else. And if you really study and learn that book, you'll really begin to understand how to live these teachings. So for study, we say, and this is taken from the introduction to Whispers, pass not by with hurried intellectual reading the mines of realization hidden beneath the soil of words. Daily and repeatedly dig deep into them with the pickaxe of your attentive, reverential, and meditative study, then you will find the priceless gems of self-realization. Now, that's also orienting us toward how we study, because it isn't, again, just merely intellectual to be able to spout it. It's to really understand and really see the implications of certain words and sentences. I've been reading Swami's books, you know, one at a time for all these years. I'm just amazed. I was just reading the scripture commentary for last Sunday, and I was reading the expanded one. I've been, you know, giving Sunday services for like more than 25 years. We've been doing these same readings for most of those times. I find a concept I'd never heard before. I'd just never seen it before. It was just right there in front of me, and I mean, the book is falling apart. I've read it so many times. But there's just this, it isn't just about superficial understanding. It's really going deep. So even if there's a lot to study, you don't have to be in any hurry. If you don't read all his books this lifetime, you'll read them the next lifetime. But just to flow through it and be very interested in what all this means. Okay? Any questions? Then we come to participate. And this is another sort of understanding we've come to, that if you don't constantly renew your energy by participation, the inspiration gradually wanes. It's just the way it is. And you also have to participate, and this is what we say to this, give life your heart. This is one of Swami's songs. Bless everything that's grown. Fear not the loving. All this world's your own. In other words, enter wholeheartedly into what we're doing. And sometimes for people, especially, you know, if you've been... Ananda has a rather childlike spirit, and sometimes it's easy to think that some of the things we do are... People just are accustomed to standing aside a little bit. But when you really participate, when you really come to service and you really pray and you really sing and you really pay attention to the festival and you enter into the purification with real reverence and are really there for the fire ceremony and really try to learn and study, you know, that active, again, it's like serving. This is the other side of serving. This is how you live the teaching. You really participate in what's happening. And the other side of it is, as a member of this community doesn't exist unless people are in it. you know, actively participating in it and really making the experience happen for each other. So not being passive. Does that make sense? I mean, of course, there's a certain amount of this. This is a very interesting one because there's a certain amount of it that we do because it does inspire us. But there's also a certain way that we participate because it's our responsibility to participate. You know, we're always saying, well, I have to go to that wedding because my niece would be disappointed if I didn't show up. You know, the family's having a reunion and my cousins expect me to be there. Now, that can also be a sort of a burden, but there's an awareness that we have a responsibility to each other. When Ananda was first starting and we all lived at Ananda Village, and I was fortunate I got trained in this way, you just never didn't go to Sunday service. You just always went. And you went partly because if you didn't go, it wouldn't happen. There was just too few of us. You know? It wouldn't have any energy. And if you just decided and said you'd rather just, you know, sleep or go to the river and swim, you actually really knew that you were taking away from your brothers and sisters because there just wasn't enough going on there. Now, because our room is bigger and it looks a little more impersonal, it's very easy for people to begin to think, oh, it just doesn't matter. I can go or not go. But what makes it vibrant, what makes the community vibrant, is the committed energy of those who are there. And participating is in order to keep yourself refreshed, for sure. And I credit my enthusiasm for the path. I'm very grateful is the fact that I'm always having the opportunity to share it with others. And I'm always seeing it renewed by their enthusiasm. But if the members of our spiritual community make the events vibrant with our dedicated enthusiasm, and to a certain extent help the new people to meditate more because we know how to meditate, help the new people to sing the songs because we know the songs, help them to have a vibrant kirtan because we're there having it, it's one of the ways that we serve. Participation is a form of service, especially when we do it with an awareness that this isn't just for me. Because it's what draws the magnetism for others. So if you're really going to be part of the community, participate has to be fundamental. Plus, this is one of the ways you live the teachings. Because as you learn the teachings, you realize environment is stronger than willpower and that my karmic habits will draw me away unless I very actively work against them. Because attunement, which I mentioned earlier, is very subtle and I've had the privilege and the unfortunate fact of being able to watch people start with great energy and then lose their energy. And one of the main reasons people lose their energy is they stop participating. I think I have my kriya, I have my personal practice, and they just don't immerse themselves in the uplifting environment, and they never cross that line where they begin to think of my participation as a service. You see, instead of just thinking of it as self-centered, I don't feel like going today. But I will go, because when I participate, it increases the magnetism that draws other truth seekers, and it makes the experience more vibrant for everyone. And almost always, when you participate, you have a great time. Last night at 7 o'clock, having totally forgotten I had to give a webinar from 6 to 7 until at 5:30, I saw Graham coming in the door with the... We don't have a Comcast system in this house because we're a separate building and it would cost us thousands of dollars to get it. So we have a wire from the neighbor. And when I have to do these webinars, the other system isn't strong enough to project it. So Graham goes next door and he comes in with the wire and he comes in through the door with the wire. And at 5:30, I'm sitting at the table here with Daya and I look out the window and I say, oh my God, here comes Graham with the wire, you know. Is it Friday? I mean, I was so confused. I've been very confused for the last week. So he comes in with the wire and I had this webinar and I was just in kind of a spin. We have had these people in the house. We've had the Indian pilgrims that we've been working with. Swami was just here last week. It's just been a very, very, very hectic time, and I've been very confused. And so I finished the webinar at 7 by the grace of God, and there's a kirtan at 7:30 that I'd been planning to go to, I really wanted to go to. You know, at 7 I'm thinking, maybe not, haven't had dinner, big day tomorrow, Sunday, you know, just like all these reasons. And then I thought to myself, Well, I thought focus is what I actually thought. I thought of this class. I thought focus on what's important. And then I thought to myself, what could I do with these 2 hours that will make me feel better? And I went to that kirtan just in an absolute state of nothingness. And I came out 2 hours later just full of energy. And everything that I had hoped to achieve by having dinner and reading a book was just right from participating. And you know, we all need to, I say that because we all need to have to learn that lesson over and over again. But learning and live the teachings of self-realization, what is really going to help me? And if we're going to really be a serious member of this community, we have to participate. I would see so many enthusiastic people who I didn't see as often in the temple as I thought their enthusiasm warranted. And I have really come to appreciate that time is the factor. It's just life is so busy. There are so many demands. I mean, one woman put it to me. She says, you know, I work. I have a half-hour commute each way every day. She says, I have to exercise for my health. I live alone. I have to do some grocery shopping. You know, she just gave me her schedule. She said, I'd love to be there, but I can't. And I completely understand that. And if, in fact, Master's predictions and Swami's endorsement of those predictions are true, and we have a complete and total economic and social collapse, and we all lose our homes, and we're just camped on this grass here and living all together, we're going to have so much fun. Because then we'll all get to do this all the time, because we won't have so many other drains on our time and energy. So I put this up here with the appreciation that this is not now, we're not going to start taking roll. It's not a question of that. And the whole purpose of posting everything on the internet, and in fact, we haven't quite done it yet, but Ananda Village has started a live stream of their Sunday service, and we can easily also do that. It's not merely for the benefit of local people who can't make the full distance, but also people around the world can all participate. The internet has just been amazing. And when I give classes now, and in fact, I've been very careful to record this, because anything, virtually everything that I at least do, and much of what others also do, is recorded and posted. And so the ministry and the participation is not geographic anymore, and that is just fabulous. So it's not exactly the same as being there, but for many people it's the best they can do, and in certain circumstances it's better, because you're maybe more awake and more able to listen, more able to just do it on your own schedule. So I completely agree with you.
And it's good for the study part, too.
Yes, it's good for...
I used to listen to audiobooks on my iPod all the time, and now, you know, between you and Swami's, like, Treasures on the Path, like, it's pretty much full.
Yeah.
And so wherever I'm going, I'm just kind of immersed.
Right.
And feeding that stuff in there.
Yeah, so participation doesn't only have to be physical. I emphasized it because we are a place, and I emphasized it because a lot of times it's good to come. The main point I wanted to say is also it's a service to come. But people just can't. You know, God has given me a lot of energy, and I appreciate that not everyone can just put out as much energy. You know, we have physical bodies, we have age, we have orientation, we have temperaments, you know, that just... So we want... Everything has to be, and I'll put it this way, to be on part of the community of self-realization requires a very mature self-acceptance. One of the most difficult parts of being part of this community is the fact that if you want to use this path to make you feel guilty, you have so much material to do that with. Really. You can use this path to just make yourself feel terrible. Instead of making yourself feel freer and happier, you can make yourself feel worse and worse. As someone once said, the goal is perfection, so you're always short of that. You know? And I have actually seen people use the path to ruin themselves. So none of this is intended for guilt. Guilt is nowhere. Guilt is not one of the 12 verbs. Okay? Be guilty. And you will have to be able to self-regulate. And just be very sincere. And this is going to come, the third concept is the community, which I haven't put up yet. You have to be able to be yourself with your brothers and sisters and not be ashamed or afraid of who you actually are.
And I can definitely reinforce that, because I used to torture myself for many years with the guilt thing. And once I stopped doing that, it was like a big weight off my shoulders, and it was great. So I can definitely attest to the guilt.
Can I clarify? Can you clarify to me guilt of not
participating? I didn't do this. I didn't go there. I didn't participate in this. Then when I wouldn't participate, I had an attitude of, am I going to do it good enough?
Yeah.
Does everyone see me as the good little devotee because I'm involved in this and that? And it's just a whole world you can build up for yourself.
But actually, darling, that's extremely astute and extremely important, because that is the benefit of the community. Is that the community, in your interaction with others, and what Darlene just described is one of the very fundamental ways in which the community helps your spiritual growth. Mm-hmm. Because you are interacting with people, and therefore whatever is your inner reality is going to start coming to the surface. You see, if Darlene was following her spiritual path without the opportunity to interact, then she would just either, she would be able to just self-define and never have to face that reality. If the community was less self-accepting and was more oriented toward, you're right, where were you last week, mm-hmm. Then it wouldn't help her in the same way. But and what you describe as years of working it out, but you see, when you really come to the end of that, you see what you've mastered. You know, that's the self-realization part, and that's how the fellowship brings you to that self-realization. And we've all been through it. All of us have been through it. And then when you finally come to peace within yourself and realize that nobody's judging me, they're all my friends, then you have something that really endures. And I honestly don't understand how I've not seen that you can get to those things very easily without a community. And, you know, that community is not based on, you know, the fact that we go out to dinner all the time together or something like that. It's based on a much more subtle bringing your energy into the energy field of the community and watching it do this until you become comfortable with it. That's why I was saying, I do want you to understand, we joke about guilt a lot because, you know, sometimes if I think more people should be there, I wish that I could just use a little more guilt or hellfire and damnation and, you know, just have a little more power over the situation. I'm only joking. But we don't. It all has to come really peacefully and wholly out of yourself. A victory worth fighting for. Okay? Fair enough. Any other comments on that? So then the last one is own. And own means in the sense of I own this. This is mine. This is not, there's no them anymore. I've been so dismayed at times when people, even who've been here for years, when we were trying to raise money for the school or something, oh, did you make your goal? It's not my goal. This is not personal. This is something that we're doing together, and we've been working very hard to shift the whole thought of tithing or donating or supporting in any way. We've had to sort of like change vocabulary to not send thank you notes, like who's thanking who, but send little celebration notes, you know, that look what we've all done. You know, well done, pat, you know, let's all pat ourselves on the back. Let's sing a song of victory. So that it really becomes yours. So we say, take responsibility for sharing with others the teachings that have helped you through your personal example and through financial support. Those are the two aspects of it. I own this. This is mine. I'll set the example and I will support it financially. Everything at Ananda is a gift from someone like you. A kind word to someone in need, the electricity that lights the temple, the teachers, the temple itself, and friendship freely offered. And this is taking responsibility. I will own this. And we also talked about this. Ananda is entirely supported by the people who participate. Every Ananda colony is self-sufficient. There's simply no other bank. The bank is us. And part of spiritual growth, this isn't just a practical question of if we're going to pay the bills and have a staff and buy flowers on Sunday and, you know, make a school in order to have master's ideals of education expressed. The only people who are going to do it are the people who are here. And the way to think about that is quite simply, if you define something as your own, you take responsibility for it. You have your children. You have to take care of your children. You have your body. You need to feed and clothe it. Well, to what extent do you also own, you know, the master's work in this world? And if the master's work in this world is my work, then I own it. I give my energy to it. And one of the obvious needs is financial, because one of the definitions of being a member of this community is I support it. And I support it in whatever way is needed. And one of those big ways is financial. And that leads us into tithing, which is an impossible ideal to enforce on people, but a marvelous ideal if people can begin to understand it. And the ideal of tithing is not that I donate from the money I have left over, but that a portion of whatever God graces me to earn, I simply give back to the source of my inspiration. Because as long as we are breathe the free air of earth, we are under obligation to render grateful service. And it has this tithing as a practice. If you can tithe the full 10%, it's the best, because that's the biblical injunction, and because it's always hard for people to get there, and that's a clue that it's a good thing for us. But it also puts us in right relationship to money. Because instead of thinking of it as a limited resource and something that I have to hoard that is the result of my effort, we recognize that God supports us. And because God supports me, I support God. And, you know, there's the joke about the, the so-called devotee of God who gives his portion to God every paycheck by throwing the money in the air and letting God take what part he wants, and whatever lands on the ground he thinks is still his. Or just saying, whatever comes in, a portion belongs to God. And, you know, it's a very ancient tradition to give 10%. It actually was one of the instructions that Moses received from God on the burning bush. And when Jesus taught tithing, he was only confirming an ancient practice. And who knows how old it is beyond that. Here's an ironic thought. There was a survey done once of people as to whether they felt like they had enough money. The consensus of everyone who was interviewed, whether they were impoverished or extremely wealthy, was that if they only had 10% more, they would have enough. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I mean, God knows how valid the survey was, but it's still amusing, isn't it? But nonetheless, to make a firm financial commitment, whether you set a dollar amount that you think you can afford or a percentage of your income, whether it's 1%. I mean, I advocate a percentage, even if that percentage is just a dollar amount that you figured out, but calling it a percentage, because that puts you in a more dynamic relationship, because you're not saying anymore, can I afford this? You're saying that a portion of everything I earn, I just automatically give back to God, because without God's grace, how would I be able to earn it in the first place? And if you just can't see your way to 10%, and I'm so amused because people who are very poor think they can't afford that 10%, and people who are very rich are so frightened by the amount of money. So both ends of it, you know, makes people nervous. But some people say if it doesn't scare you a little, you're not building your faith enough. You know, tithing we brought into the Ananda practice, you know, about 30 years ago, and we earned so little money. I literally, at that time, got $50 a month that Swami would open his wallet and hand to me. I worked for him. Of course, I had a little trailer to live in. I didn't have to pay rent for it. But I had to feed myself and buy heat, basically, with that money. And right after we started tithing practice, Swami would just put us in situations where we had to spend a great deal of money. Mm-hmm. He would take us to Carmel for the weekend. We'd go out to restaurants. And I would spend, $50 was more money then, but I would just spend all my money. But we all said, you know, I said, I have to keep tithing, because if I don't tithe, I'm just going to starve. I mean, I have to keep in right relationship of faith to this situation, and remarkable things would happen in my own tiny little sphere. You know, I would find a $20 bill like in my pocket. Now, if you earn $50 a month, you don't misplace $20. You can sort of see that. But I would find $20 in my pocket, or somebody would give me money. I had an angel friend who seemed to always know when I was out of money. I never spoke. But just every so often, you know, he would just give me something. Or I would get invited out to dinner 7 nights in a week, you know. Just something would happen. And I always knew, and I can't explain it in any other way, I always knew it was because I was in right relationship to God and Guru, with the money that was given to me, and as long as I was in right relationship, God would be in right relationship to me. Especially if we come into economic hard times, I just pray with all my heart, the more people who can really grasp from their own understanding the importance of supporting God's work as your own. And at whatever level you're comfortable with, and again, you have to have self-acceptance. You have to realize this is my appropriate stretch. But be realistic. Swamiji wrote something very interesting, and it's actually in the biography of Yogananda that he's just written. And he was talking about Master's generosity and the way he gave away anything. He had this motorcycle. Some of you may have seen the picture of him driving the motorcycle and Sri Yukteswar in the sidecar. There's an actual photograph like that, isn't it? And his father, who was very well-to-do, bought him this motorcycle. He totally loved it. He tootled around, you know, with his guru in the sidecar. I mean, it's just so adorable. And he was extremely fond of this motorcycle. And it was parked out in the front, and an acquaintance, not even a close friend, was looking at that motorcycle with a great deal of, attraction to it. And he started a conversation with Master about it, and the man expressed this really heartfelt desire to own such a thing. And Master went into the house, and Swami used the word pink slip. He went inside and got the ownership certificate and wrote it over and gave it to him. Just, if he wants it, why would I keep it? I mean, that's an extraordinary example. Now, what Swami writes there was is very interesting, though. He said, but if you have possessions, as he put it, that are given to you by God for the service that you are rendering to God, it's not yours to give away. And he gave a specific example. Let's say you have an expensive computer. And he says, given to you by God, meaning that you the capacity to acquire it was given to you by God. And you need it for your work. To give it away and then not be able to render that service, it's not yours to give away. Which was a very interesting balance point, because I've actually often contemplated that. I have a very nice Apple computer that, by the grace of God, I was able to purchase. I use it all the time. And then, you know, sometimes it's crossed my mind, do I have to give this away? No, because it was given to me by God for the service that I do. But if I have three nice sweaters, and there's somebody else who I know would really enjoy one, I can give one away because I have three. I don't need three. You know, two is plenty.
It's all about being balanced.
It's all about being balanced, but it was a very interesting way to think about it. Mm-hmm. I've also used that phrase, and this is the same way. What is simple living? Simple living is having what you need to do what you need to do. Swami Kriyananda has four homes, you know, on three continents. But he needs to be able, and each house is completely furnished and, you know, there for him to function in, because he has to move around. And he doesn't actually have the deed to any of them. They're all owned by Ananda. But they're all his homes for his exclusive use when he needs them. And he makes each one very attractive, too, because that's what he needs in order to function. He has expensive computers. He has, you know, telephones. He has extremely expensive hearing aids. Because he's losing his hearing, he needs to be able to interact, you know. And all of these things I've watched through the years, but that's simple living for him. Because at the level at which he functions, these are the tools that he needs in order to function. And again, you have to come into a comfortable expression of yourself. Behind that beautiful cloth over there, which the beautiful cloth itself we had to buy in India because Swami took us to the shop of a devotee there who had all these really expensive things, and we were trying to help her business. So I had to find something to buy there, and I didn't want any of the fancy clothes, so I bought that cloth. Behind that is a big television. Swami Kriyananda was sitting in this house, and he said, you really need a big screen television. You need to put it over there. This is the second time he's had David go out and buy a very expensive big television. Years before, he just was in our house. We were going to watch a video or something like that. We bought a Trinitron. We bought this huge monstrous thing. And it was just David's karma. Swami sent him out and he bought a $700 television that time. And then when this one came up, both times he just didn't flinch. It's like, you need that. And in fact, we've used it. Swami does these live stream, you know, and we put that on. We have video nights here and we use the big screen. I never would have bought such a thing. But it's part of what we're doing. Even this very house that we live in. We live in this house because David and I living here enables it to be a community house. I mean, it's ironic, I have no interest in this house. But we live here because it helps the community for us to live here. And it finally came to us, it was not appropriate for us not to live. We didn't live here for 18 years. This house was just lived in by anybody who would rent it, but it wasn't appropriate. It was appropriate for us to be here. And then we made it attractive. Because that's our level of simplicity. You understand that? So when you donate, you also have to be sensible, but don't be afraid to push it a little, because you'll find God will support you if you support God. Okay? But the reason you do it is because you own it. And that's the key to it. This is learning and living the teachings of self-realization, is to understand that I embrace it as my own, I expand myself. Does that make sense to you all? Okay, any questions or thoughts about that? And as it happens, we're having a fundraising lunch tomorrow. Coincidence, I promise. Because we are trying, in fact, to give God ownership of our temple instead of the people who hold the mortgage on it now. Okay. Any questions or thoughts in regard to that? All right. I'm going to give you all a short break, and then we have one more series to do. But let's just stretch for just a minute, because we've been sitting a while now. So, and then the last one is about community. And then at 1 o'clock we'll have lunch. We'll all put lunch on the table. Shanti's getting it going, but we'll finish and we'll put lunch on the table, and we can actually expand that table and all sit around together. So I do hope you all stay. And then we'll be able to just chat together while we eat, which is always fun. So, just so you'll know what's coming up. And, you know, other questions that you have, we can discuss over lunch, as well as while we go along. So now we come to the fourth concept here. Is there anything that needs to be said about anything that's here? You know, this whole idea of own, just because you are our guinea pigs, the big discussion about if the members of this Ananda community don't support it, it'll cease to exist financially. I've never had any, like, big division between money and spirituality, but I know it's a big deal for a lot of people, and they don't like when the minister talks about money and so on. But it's money is energy, and in Dwapara Yuga we have to unite the material and the spiritual, and if you want this to keep happening, it has to keep happening. But we didn't know where to put it. But then this concept was really the concept, because then if you get into the right consciousness, then the action automatically follows. So one of the things that we try to do as part of this community is to understand what we're trying to get into is the right consciousness and to have the right attitude, and then action will follow from that. Because even if the action follows but the attitude is wrong, that's not going to give us self-realization. That's going to give us looking good, but not necessarily really being what we're trying to be. So that's what we're always looking for here. So if you're dealing with the question of what to give, how to give, comfort in giving, everybody has a different relationship to money. This is taking it way far. So we talk about Judas reincarnating and being the disciple of Ramakrishna, and his brother disciples were teasing him about his attachment to money. And Ramakrishna said, "Leave him alone. He suffered enough for that." Now, of course, the karma of Judas is, thank God, bigger than ours. But everybody has different relationship to these things. You know, it just depends on what your past life has been, what your attitudes have been, where you know, what kind of security you've had to have. You know, some people come from a family where money's always been abundant. Some people have had to make their way completely on their own. And so what you really want to do is you want to feel that this is mine. And then what would happen after that? And for some people, a tiny bit of money, a 1% tithe, represents an enormous personal victory. For others, you know, less than 10% is just not appropriate. That's really what you ought to do. But it needs to come out of your own inner attitude. That's why we don't have any set sum. You can be a member of the Ananda Community for Self-Realization, you know, at however you want to give. But you have to give. Otherwise, you're not doing your part. Yes?
Reading...
wherever.
It's called they were talking about a tithing of, I think it was something like $1,200 to $1,500 Mm-hmm. I mean, that time I have seen a...
But actually, when Ananda Village began, that was the membership fee. It was actually a one-time fee. Oh. And that was about having the right to have a residence on the land. And it was it was setting the bar high enough because you moved in and lived there then. Okay. And so it set the bar high enough there would be enough commitment, plus the money was required to pay for the land. You needed to show that this was yours sufficient. That was a lot more money too in 1968. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was enough of a line in the sand that it kept people from just saying, hey, I like it here, I think I'll just stay, you know,
well,
kind of energy.
Well, uh-huh. too, because I grew up during that time here in California, and very well is the hippie generation.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was a very interesting time to start the Ananda.
Right, exactly. You know, that's why, the specific dollar amount, that's why tithing is more interesting, because a percentage of what you earn is a more realistic way of relating to what's appropriate. If you set a dollar amount, for some people, they're not even going to notice it. And for others, it's going to strain them terribly. But a percentage is perfectly related to who you are and what you're doing. And it puts you in a very interesting inner connection with that. And, you know, people say, I can't meet my bills. And, you know, there's lots of different things. There's lots of fun ways to work with it. Okay. We can do more of that over lunch, but... This is the third one with verbs under it, and is the fourth
set of
third set of four.
Okay. So
yeah, so to bring us to 12, because the first one is the reason that I joined the community is to deepen and strengthen my relationship with God, and I was counting that as number one, but under that there are three. You can think about this any way you want, okay? And you will have printed materials, but we just couldn't get them together by today because we weren't ready to commit. So I wanted to fly this around for a while and see how it felt before we committed. So this one is to have committed spiritual relationships with other truth seekers. Now, there's a lot of obvious premises in here. Commitment is part of it. Spiritually based relationships, which is that these are not just relationships of convenience or accident or familial relationship, that this is based on our shared spiritual aspiration. And that it is with other truth seekers. In other words, if other people are also seeking truth and the basis of your relationship is your shared spiritual aspiration, then your commitment is not misplaced. And the commitment back and forth will create the right vibration for you. And of course, this is the definition of community. Because as we were talking from the very beginning, self-realization is a private practice. But we're trying to explain to people why you need to become a member of a community to have a private practice. Because this desire to have committed spiritual relationships with other truth seekers is a natural longing of the heart. To not feel like we're such, you know, a stranger in a strange land, which I know many of us have felt that for much of our lives. I feel like I just stood on the sidelines and watched life until I found Ananda. I remember being 13, you know, the horrible, agonizing adolescent years at one of those, if you grew up in America, you know these, one of those basement parties, you know, just leaning against the wall, just feeling like, what planet am I on? How did I get here? And who are these people? And just sort of never knowing how to get it. I was always so bewildered by the way people related to each other. That's the only thing I can say. I didn't appear to be maladjusted, but I was never very popular either. I just could not figure out what they were doing. I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. I couldn't figure out why they were doing the things they were doing, because my interests were so different. My inner reality was so different. I just sort of stood on the edge and watched them. And then I finally got to Ananda, and it was fellow truth seekers. And the basis of it was, I mean, I didn't even know I was a spiritual person. I just knew that I was odd. You know, I thought I was smart. But smart really didn't say it. You know, that was just incidentally, I knew how to do school. That's the only measure of intelligence in America when you're young. Nobody ever thinks of anything else. So I was school smart. But it was much stranger than that. But these committed spiritual relationships with other truth seekers is the way we refine our nature. It's the way we activate love and serve and attune also. And even these, you know, participating and own, these are my people. And if these are my people, we have a very different relationship with them. We tend to think of my people as only our birth families, but often our birth families are quite alien to us, or at least not as close to us as spiritual family becomes. That's what I was saying at the beginning when I mentioned this woman that I didn't get along with at all. I realized she was my best friend because I had a committed spiritual relationship with her because she was a fellow truth seeker. The fact that we didn't like each other was so incidental. Still, I mean, I honestly realized that I would do anything to help her, even though I didn't like her. Strange, isn't it? Because this also has to do with the word ego transcendence. When you learn to relate to people without thinking about their ego or yours, that's where real change begins to happen. And this is why, because see, up until this point, you can do it all without being part of Ananda. What do I need to be a member for? And that was the odd sort of... did I not turn it on? That was the odd dilemma that we were all facing. We could describe Ananda, but we could never come to the point where why anybody had to join it or become a member, declare themselves. But this is the key. Mm-hmm. And this is, and it just has to be said, this seems to be the difference between whether people really benefit from this path or not. Is whether they really participate. Master called an environment to stronger than willpower. And we get this from Master. We didn't make this up. Master said, you know, get together, those of you who share these ideals. Make communities. He went much farther. Live together. You know, we virtually live together sometimes. We see each other so much and act together so much. And he also called it fellowship, which was just a completely different idea because he understood Dwapara Yuga rising. Moving out of Kali Yuga, we need each other. We need each other very strongly. And so the four parts of this one are receive the inspiration, the guidance, the friendship, give back to others, unite our hearts and spirits with others, and then the last one is rejoice. We start with love and we end with joy. Okay, because rejoicing is a big part of what this community is about. It isn't just about suffering. Isn't that good news? Whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow were the coin of man's redemption. So under receive, we say, God whispers to us in many ways, not only in the quiet of meditation, but also through a friend and a stranger. Say yes to life. Keep your heart like the petals of a daisy open to life's experience. Divine grace is like the sunlight on a building. It can enter only those rooms where the curtains are drawn wide. So we put receive before giving because it's a part of attunement. You know, it's not just a question of giving out what we already are, but it's also receiving divine inspiration to give because in committed spiritual relationships, it has to all be done sensitively. And the more attuned we are, because we have opened ourselves to the inspiration of the divine, the more then when we give, what we give will be God-inspired and not selfishly motivated, ego-motivated, confused by our desire to be accepted, you know, all those different realities. So, but we did want everyone to understand that it's a complete circle in the community. It's that other people give to you and that God's voice speaks through others and they reflect back to you. And sometimes they torture you, it has to be said. You know, their faults play into your needs and, you know, it's not all by any means effortless. As Swami Kriyananda put it, this is a very old spiritual family and we've had lots of experiences with each other over the years. And not all of them have been positive. We've also been each other's enemies. When I was speaking of that other woman, you know, we had been extraordinarily, you know, bitter toward, acrimonious toward one another in other incarnations. You know, we'd been rivals and we'd hurt and disappointed each other. These things happen. And so you get a chance to not only meet your best friends, but you actually get to meet some of your really big enemies from the past. And then you get to go forward from who you are now and transcend these realities. And we often receive guidance and understanding from each other. God can speak to you, but he can also speak to your friend, and your friend can then tell you. So attuning and listening is a really important part of it. And having the courage to open yourself to other people is a big part of the spiritual path, to really realize that we may not be able to trust each other, but we can trust God in each other. That was an important realization I had early on in my marriage to David, when my sheer attachment to him caused me to become very upset. And it was really bizarre, totally imaginary, like women can do sometimes. I just sat on the couch and created an emotional crisis. The poor man was just living his life, and then suddenly I'm terribly upset. And he hadn't done anything at all, nothing. He was just breathing, and then I became agitated. And I thought to myself, you know, and when we finally straightened it out, I said, what if he really had done something awful? What would happen then? You know, I trusted him not to be an awful man, which by the grace of God he is not. But things happen to everybody. And nobody can guarantee unless they're an avatar. They just can't guarantee. So I thought, you know, either I protect myself from the possibility of disappointment, or I trust, but I can't trust him because I can't trust myself. You know, I'm not that good. But I can trust God to act through him in such a way that it will help me to grow spiritually. And then what do I have to be afraid of? You just give yourself fully to life because it's God you're trusting behind other people. And it's very subtle. And this is your committed spiritual relationships with other truth seekers. The trust that God will use them. And if he uses them to support you, great. And occasionally when he uses them to hurt and disappoint you, then that's also what you're needing to learn here. And then we have to reciprocate, and that's where give comes. We also have to feel responsible for helping each other. We want to be responsible in a God-inspired way, but nonetheless, we are responsible for each other. I mean, that's how God works. He works through instruments. He doesn't act directly. He doesn't appear as a column of light and give us our daily instructions, tell us that we've been a little selfish in this way and we're a little off in that way. We have to be willing to really be friends to each other. But that's why receiving comes first, rather than just, oh, I know what you need. I read it in a book, and this is what you need. You should stop behaving like that, because this is what you need. We call that true but irrelevant or inappropriate spiritual advice. And then here's how we write about giving. Be like the sunlight. Offer life, healing, and encouragement to all. Let your love be like a compass needle, which, no matter how often deflected, turns back repeatedly to its original place. Even if others cease to love you, remain always, even if silently, their friend. Now, there's your committed spiritual relationship. The form of it is not the issue. The question is, what can you give from your heart to other people? So, in the context of a community for self-realization, you're surrounded by people that you can trust, or can trust that God will work through them. You can trust the sincerity of their intentions to a far greater extent, and I speak from long experience on this, than any other group of people I've ever seen. The people drawn to this spiritual community are extraordinary. Or they become extraordinary is really more fair. As Swamiji said, if you saw one or two people like this somewhere, you would say that they were special people. But when you see whole groups of them, and when you meet them all over the world, from virtually every country in the world, as Swami said, you have to realize it's what they're doing. And those who join this community and commit themselves to these principles that we're talking about here, it works. And then your commitment to them can be really wholehearted and appropriate, but wholehearted, because there is that, I don't know what it is. I call it I do know what it is. It's the grace of God and Guru. And in 40 years and a lot of world travel, I'm in awe of it. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, we go to a new country and all of a sudden the whole thing just starts up again. And we came from Ananda Village. I thought it was unique to Ananda Village, and then I discovered we could replicate it here. No, then they go to Italy, and it's replicated there, to Germany, to and Russia, you know, India, it's Australia, everywhere. It's just like you come into the vibration, and then you come to the capacity to unite. And what we say for that is like the thread that passes through a necklace and unites every bead, so the divine consciousness runs through all things, uniting them. Isn't that sweet? That's from Whispers from Eternity. And that's the basis of the community. And that's where all these disparate people who may not even remember each other's names unless they remember to wear their name tags, you just develop this sense of unity, and you have this feeling of belonging and being part of something that is so supportive. And what's fun about it, you see, is that it's of consciousness. So it's not dependent on even whether they're on this planet after a while. And Ananda distributes you all around the world after a while, and some of your best friends you end up not seeing for a long time. One of my best friends is Shivani, and Shivani's lived in Italy for 25 years, and I've lived here for almost the whole time. We see each other only every once in a while. But the sense of being united because of all of this is so profound. And this is what people want in the world. You know, we're so isolated and lonely. It's very, very difficult, but this will solve it.
But we still have to deal with what I call the battlefield out there or beyond this community with those souls and vigils.
Right.
And can we say the same thing, that we trust God in each of them?
Absolutely. Yeah. But you see, you get to practice it where it's a little bit easier.
Okay.
It's easier for me to trust God through my husband because he's such a good man. But nonetheless, because when you're married to someone, you're also very vulnerable. So it's a really good place to practice. And in the spiritual community, you begin to... You see, it's not merely that you trust other people, but people regard you in a different way. And it gives you a different sense of yourself. And then what comes from that, see, this is the point. It's not a hothouse. It's not like we become strong only within these delicate conditions. What we actually do is become strong in ourself, because this is a community for self-realization. So the effect of the community on you is to strengthen your own self-realization, which then wherever you go, it becomes yours. So you practice where it's easier, but then what you learn, you can carry outside.
And it's not just like us and them.
Exactly.
Like
exactly. Exactly. Absolutely.
Everyone is one.
But just like your birth family, if it's wholesome, if it's not wholesome, it's different. But if you have a wholesome birth family, it becomes a launching pad for your ability to function well in the world. You know, if you have a nice family life now, it's a launching pad for how you behave in the world. But the best and strongest launching pad is the community for self-realization, because it gives you a strength that transcends everything. Very good, yeah. And it's the truth. These are experienced realities that I know work, and I know they work for everybody. You know, it just doesn't matter where you start. That's the most amazing thing. I mean, you know, the oddest, most interesting, some enormously talented, some, you know, crippled virtually, emotionally or in other ways, can just enter into this flow of energy. And if they sincerely give themselves to it, really, through these ways, you just become different. Just totally different. And I've watched it for decades, and I know it's true. If you don't, if you just try to pick and choose and don't enter into it fully, it works less well. It's not that it doesn't work, but it works less well. But quite honestly, what we've described here today are the key elements. And you, over time, when we actually are able to give this to you in a way that you can work with, you know, year after year, month after month, you can keep reviewing this and say, where am I in all of this, and what do I need to work with? Which aspect do I want to have now? You know, life is long, and you're oriented one way, then you learn something else, and you know, there's five masters, and you choose one for a while and then another for a while. You have lots of time. But it's a divine promise. It's really there.
You know, I'm really glad that you asked that question about about being out with other people, because I live far from here,
yeah.
And so most of my stuff, I really understand the first three, but this is, like, having a lot of trouble with this number four until Judy said that. And I'm realizing that where I am, I'm starting to trust people more somehow. I don't know how it's happening, but it's like they're talking to me more, and I'm talking to them more, and it's got to have something to do with all of this.
That's the best way to say it. It's just got to have something to do with all of this. That's right.
It's so strange.
Isn't it interesting?
Yeah.
You see, Marilyn, your vibration is shifting.
Yeah, sure.
And when your vibration shifts a little bit outside, you see, truthfully, and I don't mean just you personally, but when one's vibration begins to expand beyond your narrow ego, you get attuned to a bigger reality, and then more people feel in attunement with you because you're now in tune with more. When you have gotten into the spirit and you feel that thread of divinity in yourself that's running through all of the others, they feel more united with you. And their inclination to relate to you. Swami tells the story of the woman he met on the Paris metro, who was one of 700 people at a symphony, but somehow or another felt that he was her personal friend, even though she'd never seen him before, because he had such a sense of unity with everyone that she was just immediately drawn right into his aura. And, you know, you see it manifest in a big way, and then you watch, oh, look, that's happening to me too. That's the fun of these teachings, is it's not just Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior, who's so far above us, have mercy on me. It's like, oh, that which I do, ye shall do in greater things. And this is what Master did, this is what Swami did, this is what Jesus did, and this is how they did it. And they're big in it, and we're little in it, but we're actually all doing exactly the same thing in our own little sphere. It's self-realization. It's really great. So good for you. Then the last one is rejoice, because without joy, what is it all worth? And many hands make a miracle. Let's all join hands together. Life on earth is so wonderful when people laugh and dance and struggle as friends, then all their dreams achieve their ends. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, I love it.
I love it. That's where we all go. You know, we added that song into the end of our service just, you know, a few months ago. Out of these conversations, we said, you know, we're always talking about God, but we're not reaching out to each other. And just putting that in at the end of the service, you know, and having us hold hands and really see one another as a manifestation of what we've been attuning to, I think it's really changed everything in a lovely way. And so it seemed like an appropriate ending point for this. Okay. Does that work? Now, if we were really totally organized and you all people were really just people trying to decide if you wanted to become members of this community, we would now ask you, you know, is this what you want? And would you like to make a commitment? And in some way you would affirm these things in an official way. But we're still just flowing with this.
So they would affirm it right here.
Probably. We would probably give you the chance to do that now that you understand what's being asked of you. Yes, Jen.
Knowing that this was coming up and so forth, wrote my little list.
Okay.
So, is something, you know, because I was thinking, okay, is being a new member, what have I noticed? And how could that be easier on somebody else? Explanations of things, so that I was writing down all my little things and thoughts and so forth. And I don't know.
No, go ahead. I mean, are you going to? You want to share
do
it with
you? Want
the,
me to share? I don't know.
So
this
what
is the time to share?
I think so.
Or was I even supposed to bring my list?
No. You can do whatever seems appropriate. I mean, now you've made us curious. So now
Well, one thing that I really learned with, we started with the Raja Yoga. Because for me, I have to have all my ducks in a row, and I really wanted to learn about the teachings, and what a way to dive in.
Yeah, you wanted to, right.
And then I noticed that after that, to take Med 2, we went right into Med 1, because I wanted to get that more solid core. But then when I was realizing that David, we tried Med 2, but we were gone so much it really didn't work, so we're going to take it again. David won't be teaching it for another month or so, whatever. And then I was talking to Ananda Prem, and she was saying, oh, do the weekly drop-in.
Yeah.
And then I really started thinking about the Kriya and, you know, getting to Kriya and so forth, that it'll take at least a couple of years.
Well, it takes about one, but anyway.
But what I'm thinking is that I think it would be helpful and suggested to one to take all these meditations, but take a month off between each one and do drop-ins
and get solid.
Get that practice down.
It's a very good idea, Jan. Excellent idea. That's an excellent idea.
One thought that I've observed. Let's see. The other thing that I have gotten involved with that really helped after Raja Yoga was the Mentoring Ship. And so I've been working with Saranya.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and that's been really helpful to answer a lot of questions.
Yeah, excellent.
So the Mentoring Ship.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's designed for. That's perfect.
Right, but I mean, for new members. The other thing that was something I felt should be brought up in new members is the lawsuit. The reason being is when I first started on this path and we were talking to somebody in January and they said to me,
don't get involved with them.
But the lawsuit got totally twisted. It wasn't the true lawsuit that really occurred. It was what somebody misread or misheard or whatever, being in this area. And so, you know, I was like, oh, God, you know. And so I, right away, I gave it a couple weeks of pondering, you know, researching and going, what's really going on? And then I had a meeting with Bimbara, and, you know, he and I really talked, because in my heart, I knew what was being said to me was not truth at all. I mean, I didn't have any question that there was something really going on, but I think that there are people out there that want to.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So those are just my thoughts, my to-do list.
But, you know, all of those are very good ideas, all of them, and that will help people to be where they need to be. Yeah.
Right. And the one thing, when I was talking with, back to the meditation, when I was talking to to take the meditation, I didn't even realize that was an option to do the weekly meditation.
You're right.
One
of the things that, as I said, is an extension of this is to make it more clear to people how to progress. And that's exactly what we need to do.